You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
All right, that test seemed to work, so let's see here. That test seemed to work, so I was in the lobby trying to record. I'd actually read this entire post from Clues Forum that I'm about to read, but I'm going to read it again because it didn't record, even though I thought that I understood how to do it. So I'm going to try it one more time. I'll read the whole darn thing. It's a response to the Flat Earth stuff that's going on. It's already a bit obsolete because I'm back at Simon's place. I'm actually in his kitchen right now. And oops, am I recording with the right device? Capture is... there we go. That's better, isn't it? Anyway, all right, here we go. After I last visited Simon, he found a document on his computer desktop that he must have meant to investigate while researching Earth models, and it was called proofs.doc. Simon asked me if I left it there for him, and I truthfully answered that I did not, and I don't know where it came from. And I saw old text or manuscript. Its title was 100 Proofs the Earth is Not a Globe. And I have found that this writing is credited to the Flat Earth personality Samuel Robotham, and was ostensibly published in 1885. After he sent it to me and I took a look, Simon, of course, not old Sam, I decided that I would go through it point by point and respond to each individual, quote, proof, unquote. But I was disappointed by some of its sad logic and decided to postpone that in favor of a different activity. The activity I would like to conduct is to alleviate a potential rift that is appearing in a population of people waking up to the amount of coordinated fakery, lies, and self-deception that has been occurring on or in or at Earth, whatever you prefer. This rift is something that I think, as some have suggested, may be partially deliberate and which might be somewhat military intelligence in nature. Many people seem to think it is somehow vital to the questions of what has been falsified in our history and science and politics. I'm going to interject and edit the post as I read it. And one of those interjections right now is in our politics. I mean, people think that this is crucial to our politics right now, which I don't know if that's really true. But anyway, which certainly isn't everything of those subjects, even though it is a great deal, if not a majority, depending on our sources. And what isn't invented is influenced by our ignorant beliefs that come from that which has been creatively invented. As such, I would like to try to prevent the rift that is developing by addressing a protest people seem to be getting excited about in my most level-headed and reasoned way that I can muster. The protest is that Clues Forum has not addressed Earth or universe models at all, which I find to be an intellectually dishonest notion when it's not made by people who simply have not read this very thread in its entirety. And we have this 50-page thread here that actually addresses many of the topics, if only once, because the ways that they have been addressed, I think, are actually pretty good. My motivation for addressing them or it again in a way that catches up to what I consider recent hype about it all is trifold. One, I would like to address these points with people in my personal life, and the exercise will help me articulate myself for future discussions. Two, I have selfish interests in keeping our forum relevant to people who are interested in interesting subjects, whom I consider the majority of amateur, quote, flat earth, unquote, investigators to be. That is to say, even if I disagree with the enthusiasm and lack of research with which some promote the poor arguments of, quote, flat earth, unquote, I believe it indicates a hunger for a collective reconsideration and re-examination of our world, even at the expense of belief in the old priesthood, which is NASA, ESA, Jet Propulsion Labs, Lockheed Martin, GE, BAE Systems, our governments, and so on and so forth. And that is the inevitable result of realizing we have been chewing on loads of bullshit so-called facts for centuries, if not time immemorial. I'm just going to pause for a second because my rice is burning. Is sending me a message about possibly doing a 9/11 anniversary hoax show tomorrow, monitoring the hoax, if they even mention it this year. It seems like there's all quiet on the Western Front. Hello? It just booted me off there. I don't know what that was about. Anyway, continuing the reasoning, particularly in regards to so-called facts, which we are now uncovering is a whole lot of bullshit mixed into our history, if not comprising the majority of it. And how realizing this and collectively celebrating our cathartic victory over the deception is something we should proudly take part in. And so this flat earth discussion is obviously, you know, rolling out of that a bit. We should also not to fail... We should also not fail to learn from past encounters with highly suspicious entities that attempt to steer discussions into limited hangouts, even while being careful not to fall for new traps, which admittedly this post may be doing by even addressing the topic. But I'm prepared to take that risk since I feel capable of discussing it at an actual amateur level rather than an artificially dumbed down level. And the third reason is because I greatly desire to appeal to our highest intellect and compassion for one another, and to remark that we really ought not to fight about things that can be reasoned out as logically as subjects like these. Subjects that we as a species are clearly so collectively brilliant about, and conversely ignorant about, while also quite enthusiastic about, even as it remains roughly harmless and unimportant to our daily lives, except as a litmus test of the beliefs promoted by our sisters and brothers and cousins that make up our philosophical kind. I must apologize for past behavior and for this post in case I've offended or will offend. It is partially my fault for having any passion about unanswerable questions at all, but I hope that you will not hold it against me. I don't need to go into the various dramas beginning to pent up within different circles, nor review the nasty names and accusations we have thrown at each other when we were caught up in the difficulty of this awakening. And just to interject in my own post again, a little snit occurred immediately after I wrote this post with user Celine, who took a lot of issue with the data that I presented in the same way that I took issue with it at the beginning of the thread, which is why I expressed frustration at them for not reading the thread in the first place, because I was clearly in that position. I was supporting the most conventional theory about Earth that I could probably conjure just from my education or miseducation. But let us now be relieved in the amazing recognition that we are in an awakening, and that the difficulty is a collective struggle rather than one we have to suffer alone. And it is not one we have to rely on mainstream or alternative media channels to catch up on, nor is it necessary to buy any book or media, since it seems everything that isn't from dodgy groups like NASA, and even some of that stuff, is available for public scrutiny for the time being. And even those buffoons at NASA proudly present their hypocrisy and contradiction for any and all to accept or reject. Let us bear with the lone, unique experiments that we are scrutinizing, mainly because a lot of them have not been reconducted after their initial setup and the results that were found, and because they've contradicted another over the years. I'm talking about experiments like Ares failure, Michelson-Morley attempts to test the speed of light, etc. Let us rationally and calmly try to discuss our beliefs with one another, even if we also allow ourselves to politely show our passion and our interest in our own perspective without wringing each other's throats. And let us unite in a new era of responsible listening to each other's investigations of this beautiful and marvelous mystery we inhabit and are a part of, while not tolerating time wasters and fools with nothing to say on the matter except a conspiratorial Alex Jones type reasoning. I guess I would also add, or people that haven't actually taken the time to see everything that you've presented in a case when you're actually specifically presenting the case and referring to the case that you have already presented. It's one thing to bring up the subject anew, but if you've already been having a long conversation about it and someone joins in that conversation with old arguments, I think it's easy for us to get a little annoyed with that. And so that's why I think some of the reasons that these circles are appearing is so that people can actually make new discoveries and new arguments just to avoid the time wasters and starting over and over and over. On the other hand, I think that we could once in a while actually discuss what we've found together. So yeah, that's one point. Continuing to read the post, let us also not ignore Simon's warning point that there is indeed a discrediting and derailing effort taking place, as we've always seen since we first pried into the world of investigation. We have learned, through at least 8 years of experience, that the agenda of some is truly not genuine, that some aim to make a profit out of pure hype, or just derail the conversation, and often without actual discussion of science that will get us anywhere. Some may even be hired, as per military contracts, to steer all discussions back to a divisive, personality-centric, especially celebrity-worshipping or cult personality-worshipping, consumerist zombie profit model based on derailing serious questions and pretending to be interested in them. This often results in interviews on Coast to Coast AM or other alternative, so-called alternative medias, or the History Channel. And it does not rock the boat of the financial backers and their fanatical devotees in charge of writing an unfair balance of our world's stories about itself. It also brings attention back on attention getters rather than inspiring people with information. Sometimes it takes the form of disinformation campaigns, and sometimes it takes the form of pumping up useless information. Sometimes it is just a simple mistake or poor logic and poor thinking, and we all have to make our own choices about how much we can allow that naivety into the discussion, because it's important to always open up the discussion to as many people as possible, of course, that can handle the discussion. For the sake of keeping this awakening ball rolling, let those of us interested in useful information focus our attention on that. I haven't any interest in the personality discussions, but I do choose to respond to my intuition and my responsibility to a functional forum, in this case, by associating rarely with people I trust and not at all with people I feel are betraying my trust or trying to turn people against people I trust with sympathy ploys. If I do suspect people are kind of on the fence as far as whether they're derailing a conversation or not, or whether they're delaying a derailment that they eventually plan to implement, well, I guess I must tolerate it until then. I hope you can find your own way of managing your system of information, the way that you gather information for yourself and your loved ones in your community. I would like to begin by addressing the first point in Robotham's document, which stopped me immediately after formally attempting to address the points in reverse order from point 100 to point 80, before realizing I was looking for better points, so I went to the beginning of the document, and the first one reads like this. I don't know what his accent was like, but I'll just read in a different voice. The aeronaut can see for himself that Earth is a plane. The appearance presented to him, even at the highest elevation he has ever attained, is that of a concave surface, this being exactly what is to be expected of a surface that is truly level, since it is the nature of level surfaces to appear to rise to a level with the eye of the observer. This is ocular demonstration and proof that Earth is not a globe. So the first set of paragraphs I just entitled Flat Earth, and I wrote, this should be the end of the discussion flat out, if we were to strictly take our assumptions based on that pattern of non-celestial objects with which we are familiar. Yet, each time we try to rationalize what we see into a single system, we encounter issues that must be explained in a way that is unfamiliar to our normal lives. Let us look at observations we all might make, and by doing so dismiss the most absurd claims of each theory in order to humble us into recognizing we do not yet know, and we do not yet have a perfect model. Take the initial idea of the perfectly flat plane. First, we may justify this in a familiar earthly way by saying the following. Something rising to eye level, no matter how high we rise, with no sign of lowering when expected, nor when calculated to be expected, based on the given diameter of the Earth,
tells us based on our earthly education that the surface averages out to a perfect 0 degrees across its entirety, despite valleys and mountains. In other words, no concavity, no convexity. The next sequence, titled The Length of Each Latitude Before It Loops, taken together as a system of latitudes, collectively resembles a quasi-sphere. So here's the immediate argument against flat Earth, which I don't actually think is one because of reasons that you'll read later. But the problem with the concept of a flat Earth is that the distances of landforms, markers, and constructs in what we call the Northern Hemisphere match up, and they do so as well as the distances between landforms, markers, and constructs in what we call the Southern Hemisphere do. There is a greater belt of land and sea to travel between around the so-called equator, and this is the longest latitude as well. The other latitudes become exponentially smaller as we travel north or south from the equator, or along any longitude, in a formula roughly equivalent to an oblong sphere, and even better than that in favor of a quasi-sphere model. The observable stars, taken as another series of latitudes, is consistent with the shape of a quasi-sphere seen at an indeterminate distance from the one we inhabit, and whose surface we walk upon and conduct our affairs. In other words, if you take any given point and compare it to another, and then you take that same distance and put it at two different points, it should represent the same distance, rather than a bending of physics, supposedly. You know, this is just what we see. We can either take for granted that these stars are all related to one another positionally, as the points on the Earth are related to one another, or we can choose to find another way of thinking about it. However, it's true that the Earth actually loops as you travel about it. The speed and distance of all locomotion, of all automobiles, airplanes, trains, bicycles, and people on foot, as they traverse the surface of Earth, is consistent with a pseudo-ball-shaped map, or at least a map that loops consistently. And we can't prove that. Obviously, we can't be every single person. We can't be in every single airplane that ever flies. But I think Simon will agree with me that we can reasonably presume, based on our evidence that and common sense, that this is true. Map loops consistently. We could account for this problem with the flat Earth model by saying the furthest you get from the equator of the flat Earth, the more the former dimensions we were in, closest to the equator, seem to compress to a point in the north or south if you find the idea of a south pole more favorable than a north. We could keep to the notion of a planar Earth in this way. It would require a mathematical model that accounts for an invisible east-west curvature and southern compression of space. Since bullets and lasers seemingly do not appear to take right-hand turns when fired west, nor speed up when fired north and slow down when fired south. But since, in a ball-earth model, we must also assume an invisible curvature of spatial physics, albeit an invisible convexity, since bullets and lasers seemingly do not rise into the air when fired straight in any direction, although, of course, we're taking into account this unexplained phenomenon of gravity, in that case, flat Earth is at least intellectually equal to ball Earth thus far in our reasoning. However, it gets more complex, of course, and there are many reasons to believe in either. Flat Earth infinite iterations, or round Earth with flat point of views, is the next section that I wrote. It says, we could also account for this problem while keeping the planar surface as a model from any given point by presuming that each individual person or point of view contains and localizes one perfect version of the universe that expands in every direction from the point of the individual to a vanishing horizon, you know, like the circle around us, that represents all that person's body and perspective cannot be in at the moment. This may seem like a rather spiritual point of view that places too much responsibility on each individual to experience the universe they are in, but it behooves the self-same view to point out that people who are physically closer can also give life to similar viewpoints. People near each other witness and experience similar things. They can point out the same mountains and valleys. They can experience the same clouds and shadows and cosmic sky activities, which resemble a sphere. However, when they part, those people take with them the, quote, flat, unquote, perspective as they walk the Earth's surface, no matter its true spatial shape. This would mean that there is no easy way to picture an objective reality, as we are taught by science and some other belief systems to believe. Since the Earth's surface would loop in sections according to the distance the individual has traveled from their starting point, given you're making a formula from one time to another, more or less the distance of what we would call the circumference of the Earth, roughly 40,000 kilometers. In essence, this would mean that the objectively physical shape, quote-unquote, of the Earth is an overlapping iteration of waveforms about 40,000 kilometers in amplitude, quantified by counting the innumerable observation points that collectively make up the Earth, rather than merely the physical concept of a ball or the physical concept of a plane that exists independently of observers, with no consideration of electromagnetism, holographic universe ideas. This is why it's a hard concept to wrap our minds around, because it requires a warping of the language that we presently use to discuss the concept of Earth's so-called shape, if we can say it has a shape. However, why do we expect shapes as enormous as our entire world, really almost our entire universe from our perspective, to take on the same physics as toys in a child's playroom? Surely, if physics of minuscule things must be talked about in terms of waves and particles and vague locations with multiple possibilities, so too may macro objects. For a contemporary traditional thinker, it might be easier to remove the question of consciousness, which contemporary traditional thinkers always seem to find problematic, unless it's a slightly untraditional traditional thinker, like Sheldrake. Such a way to account for a flat Earth may be to dispense with the idea of our participation and to say there is simply a mathematically sound relationship between the looping 40,000-kilometer pattern and the actual physics of our world. It would mean that between any two points on the surface of the flat Earth, physics actually warps the so-called perspective of the point in question, regardless of the existence or non-existence of an observer at that point. This may be an easier way for our computer programs to create an artificial map of this model, if we absolutely need some new model, which we might not, whereby physics always maintains an uprightness, quote-unquote, despite being a finite map. The next section I call Ball Earth with Flat Physics, which might be the most diplomatic way to unify theories. Another way to account for the observation of a flat Earth while keeping with a ball model with Newtonian gravity is to say that light curves in the pattern determined from the model above. In other words, rather than presuming physics is a series of dimensionally flat or planar behavior sets mappable to an infinitely looping warp of roughly the same 510 million square kilometers, the surface area of this shape that we have, which loops, one could assume that the Earth is a real quasi-sphere in a set of physical properties, but flat in all properties having to do with light. You might even be able to say that the light properties are not technically flat, but that they bend around curves in such a way that evens them out to the eye of the observer. A problem with this is that there are physical indicators that tell us the Earth has physically planar properties, which override the idea of a globe with even gravity pulling to a so-called center, unifying center for every single point on the surface, which is actually one of the arguments for a globe that can be explained in a number of different ways, which gives us different shape ideas of what the Earth could be. But these include, one, the measurement of the Earth's surface from an airplane's height, which indicates a planar, non-convex, and perhaps non-concave surface, consistent with the behaviors of physics, and two, the measured flatness of water on a level surface. These both deserve more in-depth investigations, of course. Another problem with this would be if experiments suggesting physical concavity of the Earth's surface, such as the Tamarack Mine and rectilinear experiments, indicate that the world is in fact concave rather than convex or flat. However, the same bending or warping of potential physics models in this case applies. It continues to apply in all of these models. The Earth may be one shape in some dimensions, but another shape in other dimensions. Or if you don't like dimensions as a word, qualities. This also makes sense from the perspective of our discoveries that leaving the Earth is a physically impossible feat, which is why they need to fake it. It may be that attempting to do so somehow tears physical objects apart, if they can even stand the other extreme conditions of so-called space, such as vacuum, no way to shed heat, etc. In other words, the physics of our world is perfectly honed by nature to support our existence here, but not in miniature, not blown up out of sync with the frequencies of Earth, or the life, the biosphere, or bioplane, and not elsewhere. But it gets even more complex. There's an idea you could speculate about if you wanted to, which I'm calling larger ball Earth or semi-flat plane, which some so-called flat Earthers use as a model. A sort of simplistic guess I once also had to explain the possibility of our observations of flatness is to guess that the lower hemisphere of the Earth is what we are told is the Antarctic continent. That is to say, half the Earth is actually just the Earth that we know. It would mean the Earth is actually about twice as wide as it is said to be, which would explain why going into the sky with an extremely high altitude craft does not reveal the curvature we expect. Point of fact, it doesn't really reveal any curvature at all that we can see. At least it's really debatable whether it does reveal any curvature, so not quite a good explanation. But moving on, the problem with this notion, too, is that we would have to dispense with the stars, sun, and planets being a consistent spherical observation, since the southern hemisphere's cosmic orbs and points match the prediction of a southern perspective that does not warp. Instead, the motions of the stars would be limited to the plane or the northern hemisphere in some way. That would be a serious challenge to any concept of an Earth of a different circumference than the 40,000-kilometer figure measured by geological surveys. Concave Earth is another subject, another possibility, which you can kind of use to preserve the quasi-spherical model. It is that light and physics curves in a different way than what we expect. This gives us our observation of an apparently flat plane. The problems with the concave Earth are not as distressing to the intellect if we eliminate the notion of the Earth's physical rotation along a single axis, or at least one type of rotation, such that it may rotate physically on one level, but it may not actually affect the things rotating with it in a way that we're traditionally used to. Because otherwise it would cause enormous problems of tilting and gravitational biases and things actually kind of being too heavy to stay on the Earth and so on. Gravity could be a pushing force from the center of a concave Earth, or center of what we would call the universe from our perspective, as the Tamarack Mine experiment seemed to suggest. And Saitid's measurement of the Earth plane as being concave, using the thus far non-debunked rectilinear process, would be consistent with that. When discussing all of these possibilities, we must bear in mind that the notion of gravity, as John Lebon points out, is extremely problematic, even from the perspective of Newton's idea that mass itself carries with it a gravity, unless other factors are at work, which are explained in contradictory ways. And it just gets quite complex. For such a discussion, though, I ask people to go to the What is Gravity topic, which is topic 1641 in our forum. Next topic I go over in my summary of the concept of unifying all the various theories is the concept of the limited star field. I describe that as in the following way. Provided we are choosing a flat Earth or dome Earth and have a limited star field that behaves like it would be consistent on a smaller globe, we could also suggest that positions on the far south of the Earth, such as in Australia, would give us a very unique model for the heavens we observe to, quote, spin, unquote. If the Earth is concave, we do not have the same issue, as the entire cosmos that we know would be contained within the Earth itself, and we may preserve, albeit inverted, even the motions of the planets and the pseudo-spherical appearing star field. The point against this is almost purely aesthetic. Some would say Earth is different from the orbs we observe, and some would say it must be the same. I would argue that since we see it very differently, we don't have to assume it is the same. However, math can create a model for either case, and it doesn't seem to make a lick of difference. One solution to make flat or convex dome Earth work with our observations of the stars is to treat the map of the star field as something that behaves with similar physics as the observation points we might propose in a flat infinite plane, or what I called earlier ball Earth with flat point of views. I personally find this solution rather problematic, having actually been to Australia and having observed the constellations behaving as expected on a ball Earth with flat point of views, or flat Earth infinite iterations, or something akin to the ball star field. However, I don't think ball Earth can be spinning or is spinning while preserving traditional spinning mechanics, since we do not observe any spinning effects except the visual turn of the star field, and of course the planets and everything. So the entire cosmos turns in some way. Suggesting the appearance of the star field alone is what moves rather than the physical field, which leads to the next discussion about still Earth. The problem with the combination of Newtonian gravity combined with the concept of a spin to the Earth is that extremely heavy objects would become lighter, everything would lean towards the outside of the spin, the equator, and there's no evidence whatsoever that this is the case. One possibility, as discussed earlier, is that gravity functions much differently than we expect. That would have to be explored in its own way. Another possibility is that the Earth does not spin, or at least does not rotate entirely physically, in which case the stars and heavenly bodies' motions would have to be explained in another way. I'm comfortable with a proposal I don't think I've heard before, but which I have suggested as an explanation. It goes like this. It's the subject I call Still Cosmos Spiraling Light, and it's the last sort of thing before we come full circle, no pun intended. Since we observe many things spinning and warping both around observable heavens, which we cannot physically reach, we may also wonder if light and electromagnetism doesn't also have a helical, spiral, or wave pattern of some kind that is exaggerated, or which grows depending on conditions, or which in some other way has a time difference or a chronological span to it. In other words, as we witness magnetism and electromagnetism having spin, direction, and amplitude, we might suggest that larger versions warp the further away it is. So this would mean that stars coming in would take a certain time to come in, and as they come in, the light might be coming in all spirally. It's possible that while the cosmos are only moving as much as we observe them to move, from the standpoint of someone racing across the 40,000 kilometers at 16 or 1,700 kilometers an hour, or roughly transiting the globe in 24 hours, which is to say the Earth is racing under you while the stars are not moving, then in that case, from that standpoint, the light from a still or semi-still or even orbiting sun, as per the Tycho SSS or the Tycho Simon Shack model, which I'm a fan of because of its elegance, and Simon himself will go into all that at some point, I'm sure. In such a case, takes a certain time to spiral in, while the stars take a different time, and so forth. So this would mean that the star positions in the Milky Way are more than illusions. They would be shifted from their actual place based on their distance from us, and the additional time it takes for the light to come in doing its thing. I am also interested in this because it ties in with electric universe theory. It ties in with Simon's discoveries about exact ratios in which the observations we can make all relate to one another about the planets and sun. In other words, I would suggest an electromagnetic sort of locking going on between all of the effects that we see in the sky. However, the stars and cosmos seem to move so perfectly with each other as if it were merely our perspective that's changing, except for, of course, everything has a sidereal movement across the star field. So the idea would have to take all that into account. And could it be that, like distant objects that appear to merge together, distant electromagnetic qualities also become less distinguishable from a long enough distance? Could star twinkle not purely be from space dust or debris, but from some pulsing and measurable electromagnetic pattern? We must return again to the beginning with the problem of a seemingly flat Earth with globe-like heavens, a special as yet undescribed definition of gravity, and an unknown system of relationships between the observations, the physics, the light, and so on, such that you could stretch and warp the model to fit the results of the experiments. And, of course, depending on what you're looking at, it would fit the subjects you are interested in, while relegating subjects that you are not interested in to the land of mystery and obscurity. And that is just the danger of this whole idea of ball Earth skeptic versus ball Earth, or flat Earth versus concave. Because if you are setting up all the evidence to bias yourself towards a model before you've actually looked at the full body of evidence, which is all very contradictory and much more interesting when taken as a whole, you are relegating yourself to a position that forces you to throw out observations that contradict your model of choice. Thus, our studies of various sciences having to do with our world have the potential to be extremely divisive, And I think that's where Simon is right when he says that there could be some kind of campaign to make it more divisive than it needs to be, because we're looking at these things and each of us has an aesthetic and each of us wants to be drawn into one model that we prefer, rather than simply discussing the evidence, reconducting experiments, and so on, doing something more productive. In conclusion, all models have their easy solutions and their difficult problems, and none of them seems to be exactly easy to nail down as the final model we should step away with as a perfect worldview or perfect theory of everything. I am comfortable with this, and I really don't see the need to have a single model if multiple models work for various functions of our complex world with a multiplicity of viewpoints and ideas, many of which are useful for the functions that they specialize in without a direct necessity for cohesive unity with other functions. However, if we were to approach such an ambitious model, I believe the interesting behaviors of electromagnetism, vibration and kinematics, and ontology or consciousness taken together will reap the best new results in unifying all the strange evidence. Then I finish my post with a brief and what I call overly simplistic table I made for my own self called Hoi-Polloi's Chart of Worlds. And it's just a sort of a breakdown of how the five models that I talked about compare with various evidences and whether they're compatible or not with them. As a final apology for the whole topic, I want to say that I do not want to offend believers and adherents to any system or theory. I have already noticed me and many others becoming heated in their discussion. I'm probably one of the most guilty of that, having been someone that adamantly supported beer like everything, only to actually look at the evidence and then later conclude I really don't know, and then proceed to become frustrated with others that can't come to the same conclusion that I had, even though I myself had to go through this process. So that's an apology to anyone I've offended or will offend by just discussing these things, working on it. It's a waking up process for me as well. And if you read this thread or hear this reading of the thread, you will see that I was an adherent before I began looking into it. But now I can much more safely declare I really don't know, while also adding, but I am somewhat comfortable with that, if not really comfortable with it, and it does not diminish my curiosity and my wonder and my drive to find out more and to motivate as much as I can a community of people that would reinvestigate, or multiple communities that would reinvestigate things that don't particularly add up. You know, so thank you for listening and or reading. And that is, I think, all I really wanted to say this time. I hope that you had fun. Hoi-Polloi out.
Hey everybody, September 10th, 2015, the audio chat with the Conscious Vegan. Hello, Conscious Vegan.
Hello, Ab. How's it going today?
Bad. How's my audio right now? Is it pretty good?
Yeah, you're coming through crystal clear.
Ah, that's what I like to hear. Crystal and clear.
Yeah, I know you were having some problems with being choppy the last couple of days.
I'm not choppy now.
No, sounds fine.
Hi, guys. Looks like we have Psyoptopickle with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
Let me just, what was that, Psyoptopickle?
That's me.
Yeah, I think we just made a little jokey about Psyoptopickle once, and that name is kind of funny.
Kind of just stuck.
Well, it's that, maybe. Alright, let's talk about what's going on. Hoi-Polloi sent me this 17-page document from it's on the website of what are they called? The Flat Earth Society, and it's 100 proofs that the Earth is not a globe. It's published in 1895 by a William Carpenter, whoever he was, an astronomer of his day, author of Common Sense on Astronomy, and Hoy sort of Hoy was taking a position on it, but just said it was interesting and had I read it and stuff, and I'll drop the link if it's worth it. I just dropped it in the other room, but I'll drop it into this room as well. There we go.
Yeah, well, Hoi did a post on that and did an audio on that, and I just posted it on the...
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm not catching up with things here.
I haven't had a chance to listen to Hoi's audio, and I haven't really read Hot Hoy's Clues Forum post much on that. It's there.
This out.
Yeah, I was planning on giving that a listen later.
By the way, Hoy recorded that himself because the first time he said put it through on audio chat, evidence of that. But nevertheless, guys, if you have something you're working on and you want to record it, make sure you record it at your end.
Yeah.
Record, and then just email it to me. And email it to me at ima@fakeologist.com, I-M-A. Uh-huh. Or just give me a link to a Dropbox, and I'll grab it out of your Dropbox. Sendspace.com. If you don't have a Dropbox, sendspace.com. There's a million file transfer programs.
Yeah, there's plenty.
Conscious?
What was that?
Conscious?
Yes.
You're echoing like crazy. You're echoing through Psyoptopickles, Mike.
Is it mine? Oh, I'm sorry. Let me turn it down a bit.
Psyopticon had a little blast from the past again. The subject of the voice morphing came up again with old friends.
When was this?
Who could have met? It's the Dustband show resurfaced with
Eric
Dubé.
I was listening to that. He seems really really bitter about Fakeologist.com for some reason. He seems pretty angry with you, Ab.
I know. And
I know.
It's amazing. And a year later, I still don't understand it. Maybe Psyopticon does, because I don't get it.
Yeah, he straight up fucked your show like three times. I was like, oh my goodness, he's not playing around. He's just gone straight to it.
I certainly don't understand it.
Don't get it. Even if Psyopticon is a paid disruptor working for Tavistock, I still don't get it. I don't understand exactly what you did. I didn't at the time. I didn't now. Were voice morphing.
No, I certainly wasn't voice morphing. I must have one of those squeaky voices that goes all over the place, but I don't know quite well. I think it was kind of just a pretext for silencing me. My research was so profound and it shook America and shook the world, so they had to silence me. So, no, I don't know. I don't know what it was. Maybe I got on quite well with Ban how did those two pair work? It's like Ash and Ban, isn't it? Or
Dusty Ash and Banazir. And they just did audio with Eric Dubé.
They're very bitter then, are they? Where's this then?
Video. Turn you guys up a bit. I can't hear you. I don't know what. They were just going off about how Fakeologist is awful, Ab's a shill, this and that.
I don't know what to say. Maybe they just kind of like want to distance themselves and create some distance there, sort of like philosophically or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't heard it yet, so I shouldn't comment. But
Let me be clear on what I do. Now, if somebody wants to create an audio and doesn't know how to do it or wants to stream it on my site, and it's something that interests me or I somewhat agree with, I will help that person. I will host their files. There's no problem there, because it doesn't really cost me anything but my time. I have an unlimited account. I don't have a problem doing that. Because Dustban was on my site, I like the guy. I like the guys, and I helped them get an audio. Certainly don't need my help now. They can just use YouTube if they want. That's fine with me, too, which is what they're doing. But that doesn't mean I endorse them or their views, and probably they don't endorse all my views. My site is an independent site. I don't have alliances with anybody, particularly. I have people I like, people I agree with. And I have people I don't like and people I don't agree with, and they don't tend to get posted on my site. That's why it's called a personal blog. And people don't understand that. They have to review terms of use. Like, if you don't like how YouTube operates, which is a private company owned by the military, then don't use it. Stop bitching about it.
So, to go on something a bit more positive, I don't know, I got on all right with Dusty and Banazir, but whatever. I didn't even feel like it was a personality clash or anything else. It was kind of like, they did it going back a long time now. They were kind of like attacking Simon Shack, you know, which is, it's almost whatever the word is. It's like, as since he is the key figurehead, as it were, of the the 9/11 sort of media fakery analysis to, you know, probably that level of analysis isn't found anywhere else on the internet, or at least not publicly, that Simon Schack offers. But they were attacking him as being multiple personalities, which maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't really care much. I'm just looking at the research these days. And, you know, I mean, I'll read a newspaper, and it would be nice to know who wrote every article and who contributed to it, but we don't know. So we just have to take the facts or whatever. In the same case with Simon Schack, there might be numerous tip-offs that he's getting there from insiders and everything else. And, you know, he's not going to divulge that sort of stuff. So I'm just looking at the research and, like, I don't know. I mean, he started a good thread about that baby's body found on the... two more people have just joined Kossoff and an ounce of salt per day. An ounce of salt per day. Oh, well, whatever.
Salt is Frank, and Kossoff is someone I don't know.
That's a new voice.
People just joined. Three.
Hey, an ounce of salt.
Hello, an ounce of salt per day.
Okay, let's say hi, an ounce of salt. Ounce of salt.
Happy birthday, everybody.
Football. Oh, yes, 9/11 where you live?
9/11 where I live.
Woo! Happy 9/11, everybody.
Happy I'm on the street where I live.
Oh, your party whistle. Do you have a party whistle?
I have often walked down the street before.
Tell me you couldn't sing.
That's right.
At least you have a salty sense of humor.
No question about that.
Yeah, but Cy Optocon, if you even look at our the shill sheet at fakeologist.com, it says that Simon Schack is a CGI double.
Really?
We're echoing.
Oh, sorry, hold on then. I'll have to headphone up.
Yeah, I've tried adjusting that shills thing. I'm down there as being multiple people or something. I don't know how you actually do it, because, there was somebody missing as well. There was somebody... Tom Delper is not on there. How's he escaped?
Tom was on there, he said.
I didn't see him on there, and I was looking for him because we were talking about the shill sheet one time, and I didn't see him on there when I was looking for him.
He's not, is he? I couldn't find him.
Somebody better put him on, then. I think Richard Benedict wants to put him on.
Yeah, Richard Benedict. Yeah, he's kind of, like, prickly there over whatever that was about. Over the Beatles stuff, which is, I don't know, it seemed to make sense what he was saying, but they don't really figure very highly in my interest field, as it were. But see, he wasn't talking crap, which is kind of what Tom was saying, but it wasn't complete bullshit. It was kind of like, seemed to have some element of, you know, possibility to it. So whatever. This is Richard Benedict, wasn't it?
Yes.
He's not down there either. You can't criticise somebody for being on the shield list when you're not on there yourself. Now, see if I go and try and actually do it. I'll put him in. Does it automatically sort according to...
No.
Doesn't it?
No.
Okay, so we'll put... this is no offence if you're listening, Richard. This is not because I think you're a shill. I'll just put your name down just to start the thing off. Richard Benedict. Aliases? I don't think it's... What did Tom keep calling him? Something rude. But anyway, trustworthy, I would like to say.
I think I'm on. Am I still on the show list?
You're on there. Yeah, you're at the very top. Oh, no, you're just after Angier fan?
Yeah. Angry girl fan, yeah. What happened to her? I guess she got too angry and left.
See, now somebody's adjusting that. Who's doing that?
Well, you can be edited by multiple personalities at one time.
It was warning me that I couldn't change anything of yours, Ab. It was just like it sort of like grayed it out, sort of thing. Oh, there they go. Who's this? Anonymous Camel, it says there. What's that mean? Anonymous Camel, it says at the top right.
What do we got here? Oh, there's Tom.
There he is himself. Mr. Dalpra. I was saying, maybe you're under Dal, are you?
Good evening, people. Whatever you want to call me. You know who I am. It's Tom. Tom
Dalpra. Looking for you on the show list.
My actual name. It's quite rare in this game.
Hello.
I just wanted to listen in, really.
Can't listen in, you have to speak.
Ha ha ha, well you can't stop me now then. I'm going to take over. Ha ha, I've got the voice for it. You asked for it. I'm here and I'm not stopping. Oh, shut up.
Here you morph it. did you see that our friends, the Dusty Bands, are back?
I didn't. I've been busy. And I've just got in and I did see. Yes, isn't it funny? Isn't it nice in a way? It's kind of like, you know, big sort of, whoa, everyone flies away, and then about a year later, it kind of dust settles, and they sort of creep back. I don't know what's happening.
I don't know.
September 11.
Yeah, I don't really like hearing people talk about me as much as you might think, and he really talked about me more than I'm comfortable with, to be honest with you.
Well, I've just had Richard Benedict having a sort of direct aim at me on one of the threads there. So, yeah, sympathy there, mate. Yeah.
But he's bit Tom, odd. He says you're in the shill list, but we can't find you. Have you deleted yourself?
We were laughing about that the other night, weren't we? That shill list. It's absurd. You know, it's just absurd. One person had been on there putting quite a lot of effort into it, but
they have. Yeah.
Meaningless.
Even Ab is said to be a honest for a Canadian, but needs discernment.
Oh, that's funny. Canadians are the most
I mean, that just is funny. It's just silly, isn't it? Yeah. I mean,
funny,
world governed by Wikipedia. That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Wikipedia.
That must be almost true.
You know, it's funny. I find it amusing, and I just left it an open spreadsheet. I could have locked her all up, but then I figured nobody would contribute to it if I had to approve everyone. So I just leave it there for anyone. I think we can all
talk about it.
And it's funny. At least we have a list of the cast of characters involved in all this nonsense.
That's true.
I left one of my criticisms up there. I thought, well, fair enough, you know.
Well, I think if you're not on the list, then you just haven't made an impression. Let's put it that way.
It's absurd, really, in a sense. But yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I don't mind. It's good, like, a bit of a laugh, isn't it? As I say, I nearly answered Richard Benedict, and I thought, I'll just leave it, you know.
Oh, my God. Up at the top right there, I don't know if it's just my screen, but just underneath where it's left of comments, it's given a list of people who are currently modifying it. And there's an anonymous dinosaur, an anonymous penguin, and an anonymous...
I'm the one who I keep accidentally... My key to talk is the comma key, so I keep hitting it while I'm looking at the shell sheet, and it's putting commas in. So I'm the one who keeps accidentally editing it. I'm going back. I have to keep going back and fixing it.
I'm going to bring Kossuff into the room and see if he wants to... Dad, he might not know to come in here.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Oh.
You there, Kossoff?
In the room now.
You're muted, Kossoff.
Hi, Kossoff.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't know he's muted. He could be a new user.
He's in the States.
Speak does take a little bit of thought.
I hadn't listened to that Dustban audio. You say they're back. Are they back? Sort of. I know you invited them back yesterday, but have they come back with another audio which is slightly... I didn't listen to that yet. I need to. As I say, I just got in.
Well, they spent a lot of the audio just trashing me. Then they talked to Eric Dubé a bit about this and that. Nothing really shattering or earth flattening.
A funny old game, isn't it? Eric Dubé. He's got a very soft, you know, soft voice.
It's a tough one to get I don't understand them. They were talking about how I was banned from Eric's site. And I never actually posted anything. I don't think I posted anything on the site. I was banned for my name. I guess my name is trash.
Yeah, perhaps, banned from the IFAS forum. It became a cliche, didn't it? Everyone was getting banned from the IFAS forum.
They were talking about it, actually.
Yeah, I was banned before I did anything. That's very honorable, I think.
Just banned for reputation?
Yeah, who knows?
Well,
yeah, exactly.
The first person to call Mark Sargent on that number. Tim, you've got to admit it.
Yes,
Mark Sargent. It's Mr. Slick Mark Sargent with that shill headset on that sounds so good. Sounds so smooth. Sorry, I'm being silly. I don't know.
As I said on the call, I expect Mark to answer the phone. I didn't think anyone would be so phone number on a video. So the fact he answered the phone actually caught me by surprise.
Yeah, we're echoing through you, Sile. I don't know if there's anything you can do about that. It doesn't mean it's not too bad. But
let me turn it down a bit.
Turn it down.
Even better. Okay, that should be it.
Yeah, so there we have it.
So we've done a lot of posting today. There's a lot of new material up, a lot to digest and a lot to think about, everybody. It's on fakeologist.com. By the way, anyone who's interested, the shill sheet is at shill.fakeologist.com. It's an editable Google spreadsheet. Anyone can edit it and try not to deface it.
That. That's really good. Promote that kind of idea that people are going to make things up about shillery and nonsense.
Well, when you talk about something on an audio, you really should let people know at least what the hell you're talking about.
No, a lot fair of people enough, talk and I was just adding a caveat, Tim, really, in the way of a retort. But, yeah, I'm with you. You're all right.
I understand. But so many guys talk about stuff, and then I can't find it anywhere on YouTube. They'll talk about a YouTube. For instance, I can't remember who was talking about a video of Buzz Aldrin throwing the backpack out of the lunar module to save weight. And I've never seen that. And he also tried to explain how he repressurized the lunar lander because he's throwing out his life support backpack to save weight. Has anyone ever heard of that funny story? That's about as funny as it gets.
I just heard about that today. I saw it on the page.
Yeah, that's funny. Anyone think that's funny?
I thought it was pretty funny. It seemed ridiculous.
Throw out his backpack, and then he changed the pressure in the cabin because he'd lighten the load. Is that right, or something?
Just throw out the life support backpack to lighten the load, and he doesn't explain how could you survive.
Oh yeah, opening the airlock, right? Like, wouldn't that kill the pressure in the?
I don't know. It doesn't even sound like there was an airlock. I think he just opened the door and tossed it out, like you're throwing out the cat at night.
Of course, that's absurd, though.
Yeah, well,
to save weight.
We don't really know
what is going on up there. I mean, the amount of stuff I've looked at on the moon and the moon landings over time, but how hot is it supposed to be? What, like, sort of 240, like a hot oven?
Yeah, 270 degrees, yeah.
Inside, on the moon?
In the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, not only all the stickers remain intact, and all the glue holding the stickers remain intact, and nobody even comes back with a suntan. It's amazing.
But hang on, can anyone explain to me how there's even a vacuum in space? If there's a vacuum in space, how come we've got an atmosphere?
Oh, that's another good one. That's another heavy-duty question.
That's a good question.
That's been asked many times by the Flat Earth Society people or whoever questioning the nature of the Earth. Yeah, no, that's an old question.
Well, there's a thing, yeah. And no one answers it. In a vacuum or whatever.
Well, the whole
no one's answered it, no.
Or at all, doesn't it?
The whole idea is that gravity holds the atmosphere in place. Well, you do the arithmetic, and you know the force on one molecule of nitrogen is like 10^-25 small. It's nuts.
Oh, it's bizarre.
I'm willing to believe that what's held us in place is kind of, in a sense, bizarre. You know, nature being amazing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so I have to be open to things being, you know, remarkable in the perspective we see them in reality.
But at the same time, you know yourself that you can suck air in and out of your lungs with just a tiny change in pressure. The perfect vacuum of space, infinitely large vacuum, almost perfect. There is no way. First of all, you have to suspend disbelief that at the edge of the atmosphere in space, the molecules don't get sucked off into the vacuum. And once they're removed, the bits below are then exposed and they get removed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Can't work. It's not, there's no logical connection between the physically observable things.
From what we've been told and from what they've done, it's impossible. It's all absurd, isn't it?
That's right.
We know it is.
You can't concurrently hold the view that there's an atmosphere and that there's a vacuum in space and that there's no barrier between the two.
Yeah, but these people, what are you, Frank? Are you on anything like there's a dome that people have put, someone's put there?
I'm not on anything. I'm just following logic. You know, I'm just saying you can't string it together anymore. I don't think it's any point now people string together a series of statements which contradict each other. That's all I'm doing.
I agree with you in general on science.
I'm returning to actual skepticism as opposed to the Australian Skeptic Society.
Yeah, fair enough.
Much more fun to be skeptical anyway.
Is there some interest in doing a 9/11 discussion sometime in the weekend? I can't really do it tomorrow.
But I have to tell you, Ab, that I'm just devastated. But the last year, it's all seemed to have come together. It seemed to have got all the bits nailed down.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote in the comments, that you should almost have the cyber gold, cyber tablets, put together.
What came together really in the last year to you, Frank?
But you don't think the whole thing, the thing about the VIXIMs really backed home in the last 12 months?
I don't know. I think that's been out for a few years now.
Well, maybe, but I just think in the last 12 months, the whole thing has just become a a crystal clear to everybody that nothing happened, that there was a movie made, that there were smoke bombs put in place while the building was demolished by, just typical normal stuff. Most of the Hollywood actors and part-time actors have been identified. All of the numbers, all that stuff, I reckon you could just put it all together. It wouldn't even have to be long. You could probably summarize the whole thing in a fact sheet smaller than your shill sheet.
Yeah, well, I tried to do that at the popofakeologist.com. One of the links is 9/11 something or other. I can't remember now. I tried to put it there.
On the front page of the site app?
At the top.
Yeah, it's the 9/11 PSYOP bullet points.
Yeah, that's right. See, you remember. I haven't even looked at it in a while.
I
meant to build on
that.
Oh, well, somebody could read that. If there's anything I need to add to that, I'm pretty sure you can leave a comment after that as well. Yeah, I could read that.
And it also, like I've been, strongly hinting at, it serves my religious sensibilities. I just think, as I keep saying, it's like Christmas without Jesus. You just have to have cheese.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Called Tom's funny bone.
Christmas without Jesus? Just have to have cheese? Sorry, I misheard that probably.
Don't you know, Jesus is spelled C-H-E-S-E-S, isn't it, Tom?
Like cheeses.
Okay.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Does that joke work better if you're hanging upside down in Australia?
I think so, yeah. It's all about the number, the way you tell it. I don't know what the I don't know what the gematria of cheeses is. It's probably raw 33, isn't it?
Oh, Jesus, oh, no, I doubt. Have promised to serve thee to Zach. The end. That was a story that was given to us. The Bible must be the mainstream media of a previous age, surely. We have to agree that, and we don't trust the mainstream media. That's fakeologists, do we?
The reason I don't think that's right is I think the Bible was banned for a long time anyway, wasn't it?
Oh, well, I think Eric DeBay or Mark or somebody said it best. He said, people 1,000 years ago must be laughing at us when they see so many people today that take the Jesus myth seriously, because the myth was just there to explain stars in the sky and the event that occurred at the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere or wherever most people were living, let's put it that way.
Well, I think I would argue a slightly different view. I would argue that the code of living, the original code of living of overturning the table of the money changers at the temple.
Sure.
That's the real power of the message, and then confusing it all with a kind of a demiurge. Demagoguery to just throw people off the scent is the biggest problem. I mean, for me personally, is more powerful if the guy was immortal rather than Superman dressed up as Clark Kent.
Well, maybe they did have a mortal playing the role back in the day. Who knows? We know we have people playing roles all the time. Some of the multiple roles, as you might think. But if you guys, there's no reason why the audio chatters can't come together now or tomorrow, if they're on this side of the earth, and discuss 9/11 and read out the bullet points. I think Simon and Hoy might. Mm-hmm. Yes,
you're playing the role of Moses in this. Devastated.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Come on, Tim. Face it. I mean, there's work with this biblical analogy here with you.
I know. I don't know all the biblical stories well enough. Yeah. Well.
You're leading the way here with this crowd.
All I did was make sure the audio chat server was blown out of dust yesterday, and that way it won't fry the electrical server. So everything is ready to go, and we're ready to record. And if this be the audio chat pulpit where anyone can come speak their piece on 9/11, let's do it. Any time. I should have made that announcement maybe more officially that come speak your audio, 9/11 audio. Deposit, make your deposit today at the audio chat. Will about 9/11, what it means to you and affected you, and lessons we learned from 9/11, and a couple of predictions are in order. What do you think the next 9/11 scale event will be? Zach is going on about the assassination of Obama with a headshot. But that one's being repeated. couple times over and over again. Any thoughts? Could get something that big coming up?
He's ready.
I think I've said before that I think it's tricky to make predictions like that. Like I said before, I used the example that I could predict that the Queen, they'd fake the Queen's death in, I don't know, 99 or 2019 or something. But I just very, and you can, it can all look so credible. You know, you can fit so many things in that seem to fit with these things, especially when you look at numbers and things like as Zach does. I'm suspicious. It's difficult, isn't it, making predictions like that?
Well, it's difficult making accurate predictions. They'll throw spaghetti at the wall, see what sticks.
Yeah, talking about it's cool. The ideas. No, absolutely. I don't think it's bad about having ideas. It's whether you sort of say sort of dogmatically that they're definitely going to happen, you know, or make assert them too much.
Been any updates on the Governor Cuomo's that was allegedly shot in the head on Labor Day? I think there'd be hourly updates because serious condition. Called in Malala.
The New York governor?
On the case. New York governor's assistant shot in the head. Has everyone forgot that already?
I didn't hear about that.
No.
Well, there's only an 11-day cycle in the news, Tim.
Again, Frank?
The news cycle is only 11 days, so probably the 12th day.
Oh, no, that was Labor Day. Labor Day is only a few days ago.
Yeah, the 7th, I think.
You have Labor Day in Australia, do you?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
You have it.
Yeah, it's just not today.
Yeah, well, of course it was pushed off the news, but really, if he was shot in the head and it was promoted by the media, it's almost guaranteed he'll recover because nobody dies with headshots now.
I still think the most incredible thing is that I'm not seeing just a massive build-up of 9/11 stuff like we have every other year until this year.
Normal planes dropping out of the sky stories
all of the stuff that normally happens is just gone. There are just no cheeses this year. There's just nothing.
Yeah, but there's a big push. This immigration thing, this movement of people is a big promoted thing. And this is about ISIS, really, isn't it? So they want to sort of refer to the sort of more recent wave specifically at this time. It seems around here, anyway, on our mainstream media, you know.
That's right, and how cruel we all are, Tom. Humans are really cruel, aren't they? They've got no heart.
I mean, it's an insult. It's an insult to humanity, really, yeah.
You're an evil man, Tom, that's obvious.
Well, what is evil? It doesn't mean anything, does it?
Well, if you spell evil backwards, it's alive.
Right.
What does that mean? I don't know.
If you live in the reverse, in the wrong way, in the reverse, you find evil. It keeps you in order, doesn't it?
True. It's just a thing that we can make a big deal of, and that's what we like to do here.
Well, I always like the hell reference in coming in when they gave us the telephone, because we didn't have the greeting wasn't hello before that. Amazingly, it comes
from when
the telephone came in. So someone somewhere. With his little hand hidden in his jacket, said, yeah, go on. Yeah, mate, give him the hell reference. Hello.
Oh, anyone that says hello these days in the street or anywhere?
Hello. I say it all the time.
Say it in Australia, Frank?
I mostly say mushy mushy now when I answer the phone.
Mushy mushy.
Frank,
I generally sort of go, when I answer the phone.
I haven't had a phone for like a month and a half, but usually I just say hello.
Say hello. Okay, that's one hello. Psyopticon, do you say hello when you answer the phone?
I think I do. I suppose in the past, like, the question of what we use, you know, the introduction was very British, was good afternoon or good morning, madam, wasn't it? I don't know. In fact, I don't even say anything on the phone now. We get all these wankers, automated calls I keep getting. I just pick the phone up and wait for them to speak, you know?
You never get any normal phone calls. They're all automated voices and crap.
Don't people just say Frank speaking or something? Obviously, you know, most people just say Frank speaking or something, don't they?
Most people know who's calling anyway because they have call display. So they usually start talking to someone you know. You just start talking to them. Yeah, I guess hello is for the telephone. I was mainly thinking about if you're walking down the street, greeting someone, do you say hello or... A lot of other really slangy taking over, like what's up or yo or
Yeah, hey. I usually say, hey, like, how's it going?
Yeah.
Yeah. You adapt it to, according to the person you're greeting, you know, if it's like some old duffer and, you know, and brought up in the, you know, stiff upper lip sort of English, then it probably is good afternoon, isn't it? They're like, otherwise, no, it's like, yo, bro, yeah, or something.
Has anyone got a reference to the hello thing? You know, about the telephone that you were talking about, Tom? Have you got a reference for that? I'd be interested
in
that.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's just me, really. I've looked at it, and I thought, yes, that makes sense. But if you look at the introduction of the entomology of hello, I think that's what you'll find, that it came in as a popularised only then. Surprising, isn't it? It was to me, anyway.
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think evolution is love backwards, isn't it? That's another one. I think that sort of Victorian era, that they quite like that sort of that devilish kind of twist then or whatever. The Masons or whatever, the Masonic clubs, they perhaps would like that badge of them.
Well, now that it is 9/11, does anyone want to give their 9/11 synopsis? Would they like to make a deposit in 9/11 vault for 2015 that we will, of course, take this recording on a USB stick and bury it wherever you live. So in 100 years, somebody can get it after the electromagnetic storm that wipes out all digital archives. Maybe do that.
Well, I'll start with an absolute statement.
All right.
Every story that you see in the newspapers or on television, fake in some element, even the football.
Fake?
That's what I have learned from 9/11.
Did everyone get that? Because I missed that, what you said. Cut out here.
Sorry, I said that every article, every story that is in the newspaper or on the television is false or untrue in some aspect. Every single one, even the football stories.
Okay, I tend to go along with that. I tend to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I can agree to that.
And that was the biggest lesson of 9/11, wasn't it?
Yeah. Even the Boy Scout helping the granny cross the street. We're suspicious of that story, too.
Yeah, it'll usually be a problem with, you know, they've had to take a picture of something unrelated and put the picture in. Anything. Or it could be in the case of football, it'll tell you that the coach of the team was such and such a person when that's probably not even true. You know, they name this guy called coach, but who does the actual coaching? We've got no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, very fair point. You have no idea. Just a figurehead, you know, somebody to look good, somebody to talk to the press, I suppose.
Is there an audio chat message in the text box? Somebody might want to read it out because I can't see it right now. Hear it beeping away.
Kosoff said true.
Okay, he's making comments. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't have a microphone or a headset, so he's just listening and chatting in the box for now.
Okay, I gotcha.
I like the TeamSpeak chime. It's very gentle and...
Yes, it is. Very pleasant. When you get poked in, it says, hey, wake up.
Oh.
Bye-bye, Psyopticon.
By the way, Conscious Vegan, I meant to tell you, you sound a lot like a past talker on these Hawkshoe audios, a guy named Tim, actually. Where is he from? He's from somewhere down your way.
Okay.
Joe's. And he had a blog called JankJ.blogspot.com, and I just got an email from my website saying that his website just came down.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah, but he sounds just like you. Not saying you're him, but...
Yeah, of course.
Trying to figure out who you sounded like, and now I remember because I just got that email from the service saying that his website is off the net.
Oh, that's too bad that got you down. That's funny. Voice twin.
A bit of a voice twin. Dal, would you like to make your 9/11 statement in the time capsule and bury?
That was a big one for me. That was so big for me. It was so, so compelling right from the start. And I watched that footage that day from the moment of the first impact. Watched those vague pictures, those black and white pictures, that sort of vague thing with kind of drifting smoke. And it was some kind of vagueness about it. Mysterious, and just kept looking at it and looking at it. And I kept, and I had all the channels, I had the American channels, I could watch CNN and Fox, and I got compelled watching those channels as well as all the English channels on the day, the night, the evening of 9/11. I watched again over and over and over and over again those planes scything through the buildings as we all did. But I was there in the pub, but the TV was right on. We watched it all night. I got home, I carried on watching it. I got up the next morning, I watched it on Fox News. I saw the fucking talking heads, and I turned into a raving Muslim hater. I mean, I wasn't really, but you know what? I soaked up all that stuff, and I was kind of wanted them to go to war almost. I thought, well, you know, I have to admit it, hands up. Didn't go to any marches or rallies or anything or join the army, but...
Didn't go to the corner store and yell at the guy that you weren't going to pay for the chocolate bar for one day?
No way. And I had never had a racist bone in my body in first person, but in my head, watching all that media, somewhere detached, was this idea that this Muslim, the Muslims was ridiculous, and it was that something was wrong. You know, that was then, a long time ago, really. To my really, it seems now.
Very good. What about you?
Yes. So, I mean, I'm happy to say that that it didn't last that long, but I got to about 2005. And I got the internet 2005-06, and there on Google Video, someone showed me. It was there for us to find, wasn't it? Loose Change.
That was the first one that I watched.
It's there for you to find, you know, in a way, and it drew me in. That initial shot as it goes round the Statue of Liberty there and the music, you know, brilliant. So that's a great piece of movie making, that is, isn't it? For a few kids on a laptop by accident, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of it that way, yeah.
When that music drops down with that bass note, doom, and you circle around in the helicopter around the Statue of Liberty, and there's the World Trade Center there. It's fantastic. I mean, that was compelling to me. Yeah, right from that moment, I was locked in. And it took me years.
Well,
I was at Alex Jones. I'd listen to Alex Jones for hours and hours, talking over and over again and looking for 9/11. Every time there was something about 9/11, I was looking everywhere. We're going through all this rubbish continually, couldn't help it. Kept going back because I wasn't satisfied. I didn't know. And that took years, took about 3 years until I finally stumbled upon Loose Change. Loose Change. I've said that before, made that mistake. I stumbled across Clues, September Clues, like a few of us did.
September Clues doesn't exactly lay it out and bang you over the head with a narration to make it clear. It almost forces you to pursue it because no narration, no one telling you what to think.
No, it made me think. The trick it did for me was make me think about it in a different way. Yeah,
conscious. You were gonna say?
I was agreeing. I was saying absolutely.
Yeah, it made me think as well, and made me try and figure out. There was any commentary on the video online, and that's when I went to Clues Forum and tried to figure out what exactly Clues Forum's thesis was. Because we're so used to having the answer spoken to us over and over again in a psychic driving way that we don't have to think.
Yeah, exactly. They tell you the conclusion that you're supposed to come to based on the information.
Right. Forum just sort of left you hanging in a way, thinking, well,
yeah, definitely.
I get what you're saying, Simon, but what exactly are you saying, and why aren't you saying it an audio track? Why is it just music and some graphics and some arrows with question marks all over the place?
I really enjoyed the format of it, honestly. Like you're saying, like it made me want to go look into it more. Like I felt like it was unresolved. Like I was given all the information. It made sense. You know, a lot of this image didn't look real. It didn't seem to be consistent with anything I would have considered reality. But I didn't know exactly, you know, the extent to which it was taken off. Like he didn't go too much, you know, into the Vixims in the film.
That was right at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know
if they even mentioned.
It got right to the end of the film, and then it was just like added on at the end, and it was like, wow, what about that for wait for part two? You know, that was a natural accident probably, but it you know, you couldn't write it better. It made
the
film like
part
have a great
the
ending.
End. There was a victim part at
Simon
the end.
Simon managed to communicate with me first time, really, when I watched it on some of the points of that footage. It was the nose-out footage that those towers, I hadn't really looked at that footage before that was shown on one of the channels live, and the way the plane looked to go straight through the building. I mean, that just became absurd, you know. It went through at such speed, it was like a knife through butter. And that footage alone, and the fact that it was then covered up with the banner when shown after that, and then that film made me realise that the footage was faked and we'd been shown cartoons. That was a big turning point, because I then saw that, you know, how controlled the media was, and of course you get the whole picture. Then of course, you know, it's a military media operation, you know, which I hadn't got my head round before.
I'd never heard of that, really. I never heard of it. And on 9/11, I was at work, had the internet, and the internet basically came to a screeching halt that day. You couldn't get on CNN and Drudge Report, and those are the sites I usually went to. They wouldn't even load. I didn't have the luxury, the problem of having the TV blasting. I never got that at all. I was busy, and all I had was the radio to listen to, and without the visuals, the whole story wasn't nearly as impressive. You just heard the summaries and the opinions going over the air, but without the visuals, I never got the visuals today, the first page of the newspaper, or maybe in the evening I might have turned on then perhaps, but I didn't get the desired television exposure that I think was critical who convinced the masses right away.
Well, I told you it turned me into a semi-bigot, you know, watching all that stuff. So there was loads of it to see.
I know, I bought it. I was terrified. I was scared for years. But then again, I was also 11 when it happened, so I was probably less mentally able to handle it.
Birthday, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be the worst
birthday.
Yeah, it's just gone midnight, so we're there already, are we?
Yeah, I still got about 8 hours.
Yeah,
the first thing you might have asked is, do I still get a cake? That's what I would have said.
No, that was the last thing on my mind after hearing it. You know, I was just scared.
The
doctor's office was going to get bombed, you know.
Get a cake that day? That's really the question.
I think we'd had my birthday party the week before. I'm not 100% sure. Whenever I try to remember back that time, all I can remember, like, is 9/11, you know? It really took over.
It wasn't your 11th birthday, was it, Conscious?
No, it was my 11th birthday.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I know, ridiculous.
Yeah, you could have a nice 11 on the cake with your two friends on it.
The little Twin Towers on fire on my birthday cake. I told her to make me a Twin Towers cake, and then we could smash it into a cake pan and turn it into a flat cake.
Well, yeah, you could just sort of hollow it all out, and then have another one.
Put a bunch of little smoke bombs around it, and then crush it behind the smoke bombs.
You can pull off a trick like that in a built-up area. I don't know exactly how they did it, but, you know. I think, you know, there was people there. I think that's what makes it credible. And then you're able, you can still do it, you know. You just isolate
an area and do it. Like, you think there were people, like, in the general area?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there were at least some people in the general area. Definitely not the masses of running people that we see from the collapsing towers. But I'm sure there were some people to at least keep up some kind of appearances.
Oh, yeah, and to validate who would then go away and tell everyone they were there. And they're you know.
Not like near enough to be, like, injured or anything, just in, like, the general vicinity.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. The tip of the peninsula would have been off. That's easy enough logistically to do, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about Psyopticon? Yeah, I mean, do you want to give your 9/11 summary?
My 9/11? I was very similar to Tom, actually. For about the first week, I was whooping with Islamic hatred and, you know, polemics and everything else about this is the true face of Islam and all this crap that I was picking up from the mainstream media. And then somebody took me to one side and said, like, it's an inside job, you know, and just tipped me in the right directions for, at the time I was kind of like involved in a group called, shortly became involved in a group called, Media Lens, but they were completely covering over the fact that it was a hoax or it, and they weren't even willing to concede that it was anything other than the narrative we were told. So for about the first, until I should think about 2003-04, I was involved in the LaRouche movement for quite a while, and they LaRouche was saying it's like an inside job, you know. So that was the first pretty much mainstream character who was actually saying anything other than what the mainstream are saying. And I kind of like looked at it and thought, Jesus Christ. And, but then he looped it all together in things like John F. Kennedy's assassination and Lincoln's assassination and Pearl Harbor and whatever else. So it was kind of like a big fudge of, all along we were told that it was 3,000 people had lost their lives and everything. So there was that sudden, you know, in fact, it was actually nastier than the PSYOP in itself to actually, lead. You know, British people and America, and more so the Americans, into believing that they had actually been murdered by their own government. So it was kind of like the second layer of the onion peeling away was a nastier flavour to it than the underlying PSYOP that some bearded madman with a bandana on and box cutters. It was actually even nastier to actually assume that, the Alex Jones fallback position, should we call it, is where I kind of moved on to next. And then it wasn't until 2005, and I followed that for ages, you listen to me, every week tuning in, this guy. And there was he had a British sidekick, which I don't know if he's still around, but someone called, I forget, a very thin guy who...
Paul Joseph Watson.
I spoke to him on the telephone once, and he was kind of like, he's a very cagey guy. He was kind of like the Alex Jones of Britain, but he was kind of like a, I don't want to be rude, but a bit sort of dweeby, a bit sort of nerdish and, anorakish sort of guy who delivered it with a very deadpan. Even though he's a complete juxtaposed to Alex Jones, who's shouted and bellowed at, blew his top and weeped on air and everything else. But but this guy, Alex, what was he called again? Paul Watson, wasn't it? Paul Joseph Watson. He was kind of like a very morose sort of man, very slow in his delivery and everything. And it was kind of, I guess it probably worked well in terms of theatre or whatever. Alex Jones gives this crazy, Texan madman with, his holster with guns loaded on him. And Paul Watson in Britain gives this, very morbid sort of, matter of fact and everything sort of delivery himself. And I guess they were like Chalk and Cheese or Cheech and Chong or something or other, But it wasn't until 2005. And I was actually moving away from these so-called, what can I call them? The fallback guys, to the sort of second layer of the deception, which is the belief that, these atrocities or alleged atrocities, supposed atrocities, have been carried out by our own governments, by our allied governments. And it wasn't until the 2005 attack and, the hoax attack in London, the 7/7 attack, that I started to look at it from independently of, I'd never come across September Clues at that point. I was looking at it thinking, I don't believe all these people died in these circumstances, and in the July 7th supposed bombings on the metro system in London. And it wasn't until that point that I was independently shunning the mainstream media, shunning the alternative media, and most importantly of all, really, shunning people around me when they would say, of course people died, as if they'd have an inquest for people who never knew if nobody died, was one of the comments I got when I was talking about the July 7th hoax, should I say. I was saying, like, this inquest or whatever it was, an inquiry or something or other, was actually going through the motions, it was a real head-scratcher for me to think, they're actually holding an inquest, or at least they're reporting that an inquest is being held, into the deaths of people who never died. So, who never existed, more to the point. And I was kind of like, that was the turning point for me. So it was 2005 onwards when I kind of like thought, and the lesson I learned from that really was, I was grasping at foreign governments, foreign state medias, like the Russian, what was it, Pravda was it at the time, and the Moscow Times and the Moscow News and whatever. And even watching Chinese TV, we get that on one of the satellite channels, CCTV 7, is it, or 4 or something, or one of the Chinese channels. And I was watching that in the hope that, what can I say, the vain hope, really, that there was going to be some like truth in the reporting on Chinese state TV. It was going to trump the British BBC. And anyway, the lesson I learned, if I could put it in a capsule and say to somebody like this, 100 years time, is that we had already lost our nation states at that time. We do to this day, and probably for the last 100 years or more, it has been a one world government. It's been like global governments, really, where all of the main players like Putin in Russia or Jiang Jinping, is it, in China, and Bush and Obama and Blair and whoever else, they're all essentially working for the same, they're all on the same level. And the wars that we have and the wars that go through the motions of having wars are something of a sham in themselves, that the boogeyman is very often like, very much in bed with the very people who are supposed to be hating them. And so it's, I'd say the one world government was here maybe 100 years ago, I don't know, long before, in the days of, what was that famous, Carol Quigley, and before that, like Cecil Rhodes, going right back to the turn of the 20th century, 19th, 20th century. So, yeah, that'd be my capsule comment. I don't know how I'd, if I had to put it in a little tiny pill bottle, I don't know how I'd write it small enough, but
Yeah, Christ, but yeah.
I don't think there's any evidence that it hasn't always been in place, Septicon.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know how far we go back to the days before sailing ships or something. I don't know, but I don't know. I wouldn't like to say, but you know, in the terms of organized government now, like, it's quite surprising, really, if you think something like the hoax of Lincoln being assassinated, Abraham Lincoln, the president of the USA, and how that was a hoax that actually involved the British in a sense in helping pull it off. You know, so it was kind of like. And that was presumably before the days of telecommunications and stuff, so it was kind of like, was it before the days? I guess it was. It was before the days of wireless telecoms, wasn't it? So it was, you know, it was quite a scam to pull off in a day when you literally had to sail the PSYOP, you know, the narrative for a PSYOP, you had to sail it over the seas and, you know, and pass it around to various, what can I say, sort of friendly nations to help disseminate the hoaxes and whatever else. So, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's very clear, very important. Was it you, Frank, who just said that? That maybe, yeah. Maybe the one world government for...
I don't think there's any evidence that the whole thing hasn't been, all of the history as we know it, hasn't been carefully guided.
Yeah, sure. Oh, it's beyond me. I could trace it back to something like Carol Quigley and Tragedy and Hope, isn't it? And Cecil Rhodes' foundation of his societies and everything else. For the control of what was then the British Empire, and still is really the Anglo-American Empire. Going back to that, that's about as far back as I can understand. And then before that, well, God. And mind you, you could probably go back to the Napoleonic era, and which is something I somehow wandered into, which is, you know, the fact that Napoleon, who was supposedly the enemy of the British, turned out to be like just a little shill and a, you know, a little fool guy, a little, what do they say? The useful idiot of the British Empire. Util idiot de l'Empire Britannique or something. It was like a pretty good paper.
And they reran the story again with Hitler, didn't they?
Exactly. They manufactured him, turned him into an absolute bogeyman. You know, first of all, bolstered him, and there was, you know, the Queen or, you know, Royals, you know, Edward VII, was it, or Edward VIII, sorry, shaking hands with him and, you know, meeting up with leading Nazis, and then it turns to war, and then, you know, he falls on. I guess it was like even going back to the First World War as well, we had a similar situation with, you know, provocations used to, you know, to lurch the world into a very dangerous position with, you know, conflict.
But when you read that World War One logic, what was it? Archduke Ferdinand gets assassinated, so that led to World War One. What?
Yeah, quite. But one less Duke is probably, isn't the world a better place with one less Duke? You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, the connections, the dominoes don't line up very well for that story, do they?
No, they don't.
That is the most pathetic. They obviously just didn't bother trying, really, did they?
Well, it's changed since that era, hasn't it? Because you got the newsreels just came in really just after. But you had newspapers then, and then by the First World War. And there was, yeah, then the information, radio, I don't know, when did that come in? How was it all spread? It's just because it's presented reality, isn't it? War. We're finding out more and more. Just wonder what really happened, you know.
By the way, radio broadcasting was under no control up until the 30s. It's a bit like what's happening with the internet now, isn't it? The internet has been, you know, the initial stuff like this show and so on is all totally uncontrolled. So.
You could broadcast a signal and drown out some guy on the same frequency if you wanted to.
Well, what used to happen is that basically there was no regulation on radio broadcasting, and now in Australia you have to buy a license for a bandwidth. You know, it's really quite incredible how they've been able to control that, and of course the same will happen with the internet. So the next war will be justified, you know, using whatever controlled internet source there is.
Well, there'll always be... We're echoing through you, Psyopicon, again.
Oh, sorry. Let me turn it down. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, you know, even if they do make broadcast licenses a thing of the internet, there'll always be underground audio. So record an audio on my phone and then put it in some dark net or some mail list, or we can still pass it around. They're not going to be able to stop that. Just like you're not going to be able to stop person communications kind of thing. It'll just be less convenient, probably.
No, I didn't hear. Did anyone think that war was real at all?
I did. I certainly did. Which war? Any war? First World War?
Yeah. Well,
how far do you take that? Like, we've got these war memorials in every single town in Britain. We've got a war memorial. Yeah. Every village has got one, and you know, with lists of those who died and everything. And
you know, I'm kind of like with the view now that, okay, so some of them will be real, but they were bolstered by numerous victims back then, you know, victims of war who were fabrications and just names added to the cenotaph in London or wherever else, you know, and just lists and lists of names of fictitious people who supposedly forfeited their lives for sovereignty or, you know, national,
yeah,
whatever. Well,
give it another generation and we won't have grandparents who fought in it. I mean, I did have a grandparent who fought in it.
Too, me too. And I don't think he was lying.
No, well, same here. No, definitely wasn't. But what did they? I mean, how?
But what did they actually witness, Ab? I mean, I had my grandfather, his brothers, and several of my uncles all fought in the wars, World War One and Two, and they all came back alive. All their friends came back alive. You know, the story is that there were millions upon millions, tens of millions of people who were deceased.
Well, I think a lot of those would have been civilians, but my grandfather did not come back half of his ship alive. They all, half of them drowned, and he watched some of them drown. So that's a real story, in my opinion. So that was a real event. Now, whoever sunk his ship, that would be a question that no one will ever be able to answer, except the guy that fired the torpedo. But other than that, there are real people that die. I have no doubt about that. Probably a lot of civilians that died too, and maybe the documentation wasn't as back then. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you look at things like Dresden, the bombing of Dresden, where the claims are, David Irving claims there's 100,000 people were killed by carpet bombing of the Allies. And you wonder, you know, that's a big accusation, you know, but surely
no,
civilians were killed there, and they were there, and is this not the horror of war? And then as Germany was destroyed by all this carpet bombing at the end of the war, then all of the running away from the Russians, who they feared more by culture, perhaps, the prisoners at Auschwitz went back to the inside of the country, to Belsen, to these holding camps to wait and see what's going to happen. Well, the infrastructure was totally broken down and the de-licing didn't go on anymore. And typhus spread. And there was tens of thousands of people reported dying from typhus at the end of the Second World War. This terrible tragedy, this appears real to me, you know. And it was only when they flew in Alfred Hitchcock to do the fiction thriller filmmaker, to do the propaganda film and then sell it as these were death camps, as we were told at the end. You know, that it painted it as murder, whereas what I'm saying is, did war bring a reality that the our allies, we created that, you know, horror at the end? Looks like we did, and that was real. I think, I don't know, but there were dummies in that Hitchcock presentation, you know.
But we're in general agreement that Frank.
No, go ahead. No, I was just agreeing that there were dummies in the Hitchcock presentation. Yeah.
As there
are in American Civil War fighters.
There were victims of the Second World War. I mean, without going too deeply, I don't know if any of us else are in Europe here, but there's large, you know, there's 3 million, souls to account for in the Second World War, or was it 6 or 9 or whatever it is, you know, the Jewish population in Europe, and it's generally accepted, I would have thought, that they were fictitious without going into the sort of neo-Nazi, treading into that minefield of neo-Nazi propaganda, but... What about the victims of war? I look at these war memorials, and I look at a little village, say, in Britain, and it's probably got, like, 200 people living there, and there'll be a war memorial that's got maybe 20 or 30 names on it, and I'm thinking, really, that many people died in this little village, you know, like, whatever, you know, and I'm kind of thinking, multiply it up, which makes sense, you know, it would probably amount to many millions, as we're told, you know, have died in World War One and World War Two. But I'm kind of thinking a lot of them were victims for whatever purpose, for propaganda purposes, for insurance purposes. You basically had a payout for the rest of your life if you'd lost somebody in the war. You know, it was kind of like a pension, a war widow's pension or something or that. So it wouldn't be impossible for people to actually going along with the hoax in the promise that they'd be rewarded with, you know, a small bounty every week for the rest of their lives by pretending they'd lost a loved one in World War Two or One or whatever, you know. It's a hot potatoes topic, this is, you know, it's kind of...
And who at that time was going to question all those figures? Who would do the detective work and even question it? Because it was just spread, it was the zeitgeist of the time, it was so everyone, uh-huh. a very emotive subject, everyone believed it. It was sold to everyone. The bombs were real. They were being dropped to validate it all. So everyone perhaps went along with it. One grandfather said to me, asked me if anyone had died from his regiment. And he said, yeah, one did. I said, how did it happen? He said there was an accident in one of the cars, one of the vehicles going through across a river. You know, these things happen.
Right. Well, I had a loved one who, you know, a grandparent who was gassed, you know, with like mustard gas or something. And he never really recovered his chest function, you know. He was kind of like wheezy. Oh, well, that's what they attributed it. I obviously was, you know, being born in the 70s. It was like 60 years after the World War One, you know, but he was... You know, like he talked like a heavy smoker with sort of like an emphysema wheeze to him, and that was apparently the effects of mustard gassing in Flanders in World War One. So it must have, you know, these things did happen, but I can't quite see how they could have actually arranged it. If the whole of these battles were in a sense staged, like I have to draw the parallel.
I don't think they were staged,
Tim. Staged, not fake.
I don't think they were staged either. I think they probably really did line men up on each side of a trench and set them up to fire upon either. I don't see why they would...
I kind of get the vision of, like, let's not make... You know, there's sort of an agreement at a higher level of, like, let's keep the casualties down on this, guys. Let's, like, we've got to slug it out, like, for the theatre of it. Or you think I'm on the wrong path here, then, dear? I'm certainly not entrenched in it, pardon the pun, but it's kind of like a... I'm kind of wondering whether it's just a... an agreement between Whitehall and Berlin, you know, like we'll proceed by 2 miles along those lines, and you retreat, and then we'll have a bit of fun.
Maybe I think there might be some upper level coordination a little bit. Maybe, yeah, I'm all open to that, but I think real men are sacrificed, not even considered. They're just war. Yeah, I really think they sacrifice young men like crazy. You know, if there's a bigger role at play to get rid of young men, then that might be the case too. I think that the elite have more in common than they do with the fighting man, for sure.
That borders into the worlds of satanic, really. I can't think of any other word for it, but deliberately sacrificing people. Not in any religious context.
Like when they sending soldiers over to like Afghanistan and Iraq like that?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, yeah, if they really didn't want to sacrifice soldiers, then they would work out a way to not send them. But obviously, they're willing to send these young people into battle and come back injured.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't even matter how they were hurt. If they're sent over there for to go fight the other guy, even if they don't even see combat, and if they drive into each other or shoot each other accidentally, it's still as a result of this.
When I was in Afghanistan, as I mentioned before, I was in the military.
We had a guy
die on our base because they were keeping explosive stuff in a way too hot conics, and when they opened it, like, it hit the metal and it sent it off and blew him up.
Yeah.
That's not combat, it wouldn't have happened if they weren't over there.
Was that the only fatality you're aware of?
What was that?
Is that the only fatality you had direct experience of?
In our area, yeah.
So that's pretty common story, isn't it? The fatalities are actually by the sort of things you're talking about, an industrial accident.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that.
I forgot we're echoing through you again. Other examples.
Sorry. Why does that happen when I don't adjust anything? Something must change.
No. You must have to go to push to talk.
Yeah, I will do.
That's what I had to do because mine was echoing before.
Don't have a headset. It's going to echo through your back into your mic. That's why you need a headset. But otherwise, talk would be the only way you could use a speaker mic.
Push to talk. I'll do that then. Sorry. Right. That should be okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it, but if you had headphones, it'd be all right.
Some people's voices are louder than others. So if Conscious Vegan is louder, he'll go echo through someone's speaker if it's not on push to talk. But anyway, yeah. Just because the guy died in an industrial accident in a war setting, he's still a war victim because he wouldn't have died if he wasn't over there for a war.
Yeah. But exactly.
To me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That he didn't get wasn't some dramatic movie battle in an Iwo Jima type setting. He just died because he was over there, and let's be honest, they're over there at the pleasure of the Queen to capture territory for a crown corporation of some sort, or one that benefits from it. So it's still a rotten reason to die.
I think that's the reason why it's only young people involved, Ab, isn't it? Because and once you get to a certain age and you find out that, let's say you were someone from First World War, and the dispute was between the Queen and her cousin, apparently. And presumably the Queen and her cousin continued to go and have Christmas together, etc., etc., etc. And then after the war ends, everybody's all good friends again anyway. So I'm not quite sure why people tend to suspend disbelief and believe that there's an actual enemy. But we know full well that the people that we're supposed to be attacking now, these ISIS people, are the people that were our friends against the Russians up until 2001.
That's conscious vegan, because I think the soldiers that go over and realize they're fighting for nothing come back, they're very disillusioned, they have no one to talk to other than themselves when they get back. They realize it was all a big joke, a waste of time. Who's going to listen to them? Who's going to talk to them? That's why they probably turn to all kinds of sedatives, drugs, alcohol, because no one is going to believe them, because everyone left over here is still conditioned to all the rah, rah, rah and the propaganda. And the soldiers know the reality. Soldiers know the reality.
Yeah,
that's exactly right, Ab. That's exactly right.
But really, people here know the reality. Really, people here know. When you say no one knows, I mean, everybody knows that the Muslims were our buddies fighting the Russians up until, you know, whatever time it was.
After the Mujahideen.
Everybody knows that.
90s, early 90s.
And yet the same people somehow just forget that, and they're our enemy, and they'll live long enough for them to be our friends again in another 10 years' time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Whenever we all have to unite against some other common enemy.
Well, in the end, you catch the young people because they don't have the experience, the life experience to guide them, and obviously a lot of them don't have the economic wherewithal to stay back, or they don't have the connections to stay out of it. So they're the ones that are sacrificed. It's always the poor, uneducated that get sacrificed. All in the name of corporatism. And they really get smart real quick.
You know, it's really the educated that are being, you know, because we're educated in believing all these crazy things that we're told to believe in, aren't we?
Conditioned, yeah.
Right. But kill somebody you don't know is one of the most natural things you can do, and it requires a great deal of training to be able to break that psychological barrier and do it. That's what boot camp and training is all about. You just follow orders, do as you're told.
Exactly.
And you do it, and it ruins you for life. You get back, you can't talk to anyone, because then you're unpatriotic, and you have a lifelong problem that you'll never get over, because no one will ever know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the truth.
Very awful.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible machine.
Well, it's difficult to, sorry.
Well, I think that soldiers, conscious vegan, you guys should have your own audio chat where you can hash these things out, because at least it's therapeutic, just like the 9/11 hoax recovery audio.
Yeah,
and it's therapeutic to talk about it, do anything about it, really. You can't change anyone's reality, but you can still talk it out, because you cannot talk about it with average people.
Oh, that's for sure. You can't. Nobody wants to listen. Nobody cares. All they want is like some exciting war story. You know, if it's not their American Sniper or Lines of Kandahar or Zero Dark 30, they don't care about it. You know, that's all they care about hearing from soldiers.
Well, I hope they do. I mean, I hope they do try and limit the losses, as so Optican suggested. You know, they say, you know, that, you know, be careful here. You know. In a sense, that war is more bluff than it ever was. Do you know what I mean? Is that progress? Do I think, because it does seem that war in the past, I've always told, is more savage going back days, you know, and it's even to the Second World War, this seemed pretty severe. So can we not, I don't know what I'm talking about really, but I just hope there's less, I suppose that it is more bluff than we're told, you know. Do you not, conscious, Tyle? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the only people that I know who died there, you know, it was accidental. And aside from, you know, what I've read in here, like most people that I know, you know, new people who died due to accidents or like friendly fire or something, I don't hear too many things. So I think maybe a lot of it is bluff, you know. I mean, I was over there for 9 months and, you know, didn't really see a thing.
You didn't really see a thing.
Not really, no. All the Afghan people were super nice to us. They always gave us tea and rice and candy. Like, that's what I saw. That was my experience. Nobody ever shot at me.
Yeah, I knew a soldier who was over there, and his one story was that he was involved when an accident happened and a local was killed.
No, it was a soldier, yeah. And it was on our base. I wasn't around at the time. I mean, I was on the base, but I wasn't near them. Yeah, it happened. I mean, that's about all we got over there. Nobody ever shot at me. All the Afghans were super nice.
These ideas like a wedding party being blown off a hill is what we always hear with these
but
drones.
The drone strikes?
Yeah.
That one I go back and forth with as far as drones go. I don't know if they're actually I don't doubt that those operations are actually happening. But to the extent that they say, probably not. That's for sure.
And to the successfulness as well. I get the feeling that these things are...
Well, even by government statistics, they allegedly kill more innocent people than they kill targets. And that's by government study and like government statistics. So I don't know. I feel like why would they admit that they kill more innocent people than they don't?
To rank up the fear factor, you know. If people are thinking that there's like out of control drones with nobody accountable for them, you know, just somebody sitting in an office in Fort Worth or something and just with a joystick, you know, wiggling around, yeah. And I guess it cranks up the whole warfare factor. Like in the First World War, Second World War in Britain, there was supposedly, you know, unmanned German drones landing on East London and stuff. So I guess that was, you know, another fear point there.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't even have to, there doesn't even have to be a person, you know, they can at any moment. From anywhere in the world.
Yeah, but it also legitimizes the idea of the robotics, doesn't it? There isn't a human intervention there. And that's slightly worrying, isn't it, that idea?
Yeah. Well, there ultimately is a human controlling it.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah.
But a lot of this stuff is lately.
They're talking about drone strikes again now. You know, do we do drone strikes on Syria? You know,
oh, yeah, yeah. That's absurd.
Now, a lot of it is clearly directed at discrediting the idea of democratically elected government, isn't it? There is a determination to make it clear that democracy is a total failure. Bring back the Queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Now, it shows like the West Wing just go on and on about how everyone has to compromise to get anything done and, you know, it's all impossible, and you know the only reason there's no common sense is because we don't have the Queen here. Why isn't she back?
Oh, we've got her here.
Oh, we've got her here too, by the way. She's still the Queen of Australia.
Yes, it's the monarchical system.
Australia's a monarchical? I didn't know that.
Yeah, well,
I thought y'all had a Prime Minister.
England's got a Prime Minister as well.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Yeah, James Cameron, right? David Cameron, I mean. James Cameron is a garbage director.
And just to slip my very good friend Dallas Goldbug in, I reckon my Prime Minister is Tony Blair anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, anyway, dear.
I've heard he's just an asshat.
He'd be a busy boy, wouldn't he? Be a busy bunny. Who was someone said David Icke was someone. What did he say David Icke was?
Yeah, David Icke.
Leonard Nimoy or something.
Leonard Nimoy and David Icke are the same?
No,
I'm not sure who it was.
David Icke is Prince
something
Charles.
Like that.
David Icke and the guy that runs Virgin and Prince Charles are the same character.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, what an absolute load of cobblers.
I reckon it works. No problem for me.
You're a fantasist, Frank. Well, I hope Frank hasn't gone off upset. I said it was only meant it conversationally in a friendly manner.
I didn't even see that he left. What happened?
I don't know. His mic's just gone off. Maybe he's got cut off or something. He's just having a laugh. Yeah, but, I can't remember what we were talking about before that. Something quite interesting. War, wasn't it?
We were talking about the war. And supposed collateral damage, you know, as they call it.
I mean, it's set pieces after set piece, you know, media set pieces and, bluff and counter bluff, it seems, doesn't it, when you look at it on the big picture, standing back from the media we get anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But people are being moved on the ground at the same time sometimes, you know, and they can get
like there's actual people being sent over there.
Yeah, it gets people moving around, gets things really done, it's real power, exercising its control.
Yeah. Just planes full of brainwashed kids, basically. Well, young people, not kids, of course, you know what I mean.
Well, you know, I said about my 9/11 experience, you know, I grew up with Windsor Castle is a place in Windsor where my parents were both from Windsor as well. But with a toy castle and with soldiers and playing with them, you know, and going down to the castle and seeing the Home Guard, the blues and the reds of the Home Guard and being just absolutely transfixed by them. And this, their uniforms were so fantastic. And they were the household cavalry. They're on horseback and they looked immaculate. And my grandfather had been one of these people. So I grew up with that. And, war films and the Second World War and war stories, and my father was into looking at the war. So I was, you know, I felt like a part of that, you know, growing up and sympathetic to it, totally. So, it could have been me, you know, think of myself as wanting to be a soldier, you know, fighting for Britain.
Do you have Hotspur comics?
We had little comic things. Commando, I think they were called. I used to get quite a lot of them at one time.
We had a G.I. Joe.
Army books.
Yeah. G.I. Joes. I don't know if you know of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we had. Or the little green plastic army men. Like dime a dozen ones.
Yeah,
I used to play with those all the time. Thought it was, you know, so cool. And then, you know, being in the video game generation, we had, you know... Well, I guess in the more realistic, we had the, you know, Call of Duty, which is obviously friggin' propaganda for certain to make war look so fun.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I mean, there's a thing to say that these clubs are good, you know, for young men and everything, and good for exercise and discipline, and you know. But it's when it gets so abused, it feels like it's so abused, doesn't it? To me, anyway.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean?
But the logic of all this stuff is also a bit strange, isn't it? Because you know, the country that has never been to war, Switzerland, every man has to be in the, do their 2 years of military service, and every man there has a rifle in his house.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you had that in Australia, I guarantee it would be a peaceful society.
I would agree.
But of course, no one ever does that.
No, they just cucked you and took away all of your guns and melted them down.
It was ridiculous, and the crime rate skyrocketed.
Yeah, of course it did. Guns are a deterrent to crime.
So the whole idea of militarism, while at the same time emasculating the population, it's just so skillfully done, isn't it? It's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's just artful manipulation.
Yeah, we are design by design.
Yeah, yep. We're molded and shaped, you know, Brave New World.
It's a suggestion of it, you know.
It's just non-stop barrages of just this positivism of all these governmental things. The war.
I think sometimes philosophize about it, if that's the right word, but I kind of think, well, civilization is developed like this. You know, it can't help being how it is, and it's been militaristic and monarchistic, and you know, so in a sense, no one's to blame for it, are they? Because people have been born into these because it's intergenerational. People have been born into it. It's not their fault they've been born into it as innocent babies, really. And so they're within sort of, they're stuck in, you know, civilization is stuck in these lies. And anyone's fault at this point who's still alive, you know.
you don't think there's a plan that's been in place which has banned the history of our written history, if you like.
Sorry, go.
So the problem that I have with what you're saying, Tom, is that, you know, it's not our fault because we're just born into it, right? But what that implies is that somehow the mission is transferred from generation to generation by a kind of osmosis, whereas, you know, I think the position
by design, I'm saying, by absolute design, systems are put in place to last and thrive and prosper for the benefit of their,
the question is, how does that system get maintained in the obvious perfect health that it's in, intergenerationally? That's the question that constantly comes up for me. I don't have the slightest doubt that the system that was put in place whenever it was put in place is probably more healthy, more vigorous now than it ever was.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, sure. Because I think it would be designed to get stronger by nature. You know, so it's ever tightening. You know, anything you in a sense that's the nature of being on top. You can then just keep getting stronger.
So in my view, the designers are still around, the original designers. How's that for controversy?
Well, obviously, I mean, not obviously, but my first reaction would be they'd have to be very old.
Yes, they'd have to be very old, yeah. I think that's the logical outcome of our discussion.
Well, if you want to take it to sort of, you know, extremes, you could imagine technology could take, I often imagine the old idea of a jar and a brain in it, you know, floating. And
yeah, why not? I like it.
Yeah, a bit of fun. But I mean, I had no idea, you know, but you wonder sometimes. But I think in the natural scheme of things that perhaps, you know, we're eternal beings anyway, and there's my perspective can't see it necessarily now. I don't know, but I don't know what the true, you know, what the real perspective is and what eternity is and what, you know, what I'm talking about really. But, you know, we don't have to, perhaps we're all eternal beings. What do you think?
There's an aspect, certainly. Your body obviously is not eternal. I don't think you're going to argue that, are you?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, absolutely not. No, being, what am I talking about? Yeah, the casing that I'm in, no. The sense of consciousness, perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. The purpose
are you there,
for
it. Opticon?
Am I coming through?
Yeah, I can hear you. No, just wondered if you, you were quiet.
I've been banished to push to talk because I can't get the microphone to work properly. So it's much harder, in fact, to actually sort of like, physically, interrupt you with like pressing a button rather than just, you know, letting your tongue run loose. So,
yeah, that's I understand that absolutely. I'm on push to talk, and I sort of think craning forward, and then you have to press down. And it's inconvenient, really. I agree.
Yeah, it kind of is. It really is.
You
I need
do
to get a headset.
So you on push to talk?
Yeah, I don't have a headset, so it echoes if I don't have it.
We could learn to start saying Roger and over then.
Yes, we're talking military. Let's talk military lingo, eh?
That's right. You just over. Say over.
Yeah, over.
Roger.
Yeah, we say Roger a lot, that's for sure. You're not supposed to say that on the over the microphone, though, or over the network, at least. You're not supposed to say Roger. It's not accepted.
Over.
Roger that.
Yeah. Roger, over.
We're
also,
over, Roger.
What they do in movies that you can't do is say over and out, because over means I expect another transition, and out means no more transitions following. So you can't be over and out, because that means that you're ending the transmission and waiting for a reply. But they always say that in movies. It's funny to me.
Right, there you go.
So is the anti-Roger thing a sort of gay tolerance thing?
Or what, not using it? I don't know. No, they just never, it was just never, it's never been something that you're supposed to use over the radio. It's like considered like slang, you know what I mean? I guess in a way, it's just never been like official radio transmission language. There's like a set language that you're supposed to use because it can get confusing.
Okay.
Like you can't say repeat, because repeat means fly over and attack again. So if you have to say again, not repeat,
okay.
Because if you say repeat, that's Air Force language. It's just this whole ridiculous thing.
Yeah. I think we should have some gunfire battle sounds going on in the background rather than dead silence. What do you think? We need someone in charge of sound effects.
I think Del Qua's the one with the the panel thing, right?
Right. Has he been around lately?
He was here. We talked the other day, I think, in the lobby, and then he was on the auto chat maybe like 6 days ago.
So no one else has been struck by the complete absence of 9/11 talk in the mainstream?
See, I don't have a car, so I don't have the radio. I don't have a phone, and I don't have a TV. So I get pretty much all of my media from what I look up, and I haven't seen much. I haven't heard much about 9/11 on like social media at all. But I don't know. Has it been pretty devoid in the regular media as well?
I just haven't seen anything.
That's so bizarre.
Isn't it?
You would think, yeah, you would think, because they always do all these crazy memorials and all that stuff leading up to it.
That's right. There's normally something organized to be at the new building or something.
Yeah, the new building that they've been building forever now, like 12 years.
There's always...
It just shows you, it's you know, it'll definitely still be remembered, but there's not a great, you know, particularly anniversary, is it, this year, so...
No, I guess probably next year, because it's one of the five anniversaries. They always go on fives.
It's just sort of, we had it every year up till now, and now it's sort of breaking down a bit. Yeah, they'll do it every 5 years, and then it'll go to every 10 years, and then when you have a big one.
Well, yeah, I wonder what the next big PSYOP is. I mean, it's been 9/11, 15 years now. Seems like it's about time.
Well, what big PSYOPs did we have before that? I mean, we're talking about a PSYOP on the world stage.
JFK.
Yeah, I was going to say
landing.
JFK.
Moon landing.
The moon landing.
Oh,
yeah.
Moon landing, yeah. Definitely moon landing.
JFK and the moon landing are two big ones.
The 1993 Osama bin Laden attack, the 1995 Mira building attack.
The Biden-Meinhof Munich thing.
You've got Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. The Alpha Chimera.
Yeah, but yeah, they're small in comparison.
Yeah, yeah, that was
the
United States thing for sure, not global.
What about the Lockerbie? What about the Lockerbie hoax?
I've never heard of that. What is that?
Well, the Lockerbie plane disaster. They reckon that it was supposed to be Gaddafi it was Gaddafi that organized terrorists.
Yeah, it was Libyans, and it was in Lockerbie. It was a plane crash up in Scotland in sort of the 80s, late 80s, whatever. But it's not as big as the big ones, you know, you're saying, like the big one, like 9/11, moon landings was a great fake, a hoax.
Yeah,
I think you're right, JFK, you know, that was a massive. We had Diana, you know, maybe in, you know, that was
oh,
big.
Oh, Diana, yeah, that's
in England.
That was pretty global. I heard about that even as a kid. Lots about that.
It was massive. You know, it's a big public event. Thousands of people out in the streets, you know, for real, you know, and flowers, and it was huge reaction, I think. A big media thing as well, of course.
And how Prince Charles didn't really love her.
Oh, the story, yeah.
Even though she's probably a bloke.
Princess Diane's probably a bloke?
Yeah. Not a Dave J fan.
A who?
A Dave J. Dave J.
Dave J?
Yes. There's loads of people that just have a lot of fun out there. But the whole idea of, if you have a look at, who's the guy who's saying she is? Is it Elton John's boyfriend, isn't it?
Elton John's boyfriend? I have no idea. I haven't got a clue what's going on there with that. It's kind of like...
What, David?
Yeah.
Anyway...
Sorry, Jal.
The story is that Lady Diana was played by the same fella that's Elton John's partner at the moment.
I didn't know who that is.
Interesting.
Well, you come out with some corkers. Yeah, right.
What, you don't think it's possible?
I think anything's possible. What do you mean nothing's possible? Of course, anything's possible.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think Dudley Moore is Usain Bolt.
Well, he could be.
And don't tell me it's not possible.
Did you say Dudley Moore is Usain Bolt?
Think about it. It's the ears, conscious. It's in the ears. I'm making a joke, mate. No, I know. Dudley Moore is a very small man.
But apparently the woman that was the 10 is a bloke.
Who is?
The woman that was a 10. It was supposed to be the, you know, did you watch the movie 10 with Dudley Moore?
Bo Derek.
Yeah.
Is a guy.
Well, I tell you what, for a bloke, I'm a fucking raving queer, if that's true. And I'll be happy about it.
Well,
shit.
I think it's more than, I mean, if you go to Thailand, that's it's very prevalent there.
Cross-gender things that people are talking about. I mean, there has been put in our minds with we had a Eurovision Song Contest winner here, a transgender guy with a beard, a girl with a beard.
In Eurovision?
Funny. But, you know, some of these leaps you're making, Frank, are absurd, you know.
Look, I'm just telling you what I hear. I just accept that it's all possible. No,
that's certainly possible.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're hearing some nonsense. It's like you've read titbits and you're coming back and said, oh, hey, listen to this. You know, shit.
No. All I'm saying is that I think everything, what I've said to you quite earlier on is that, you know, my first comment that Ab was asking what you want to put in the vault is, I think all the stories that we see in the newspapers and on television have some aspect of them which makes them false. All of them. And, you know, one of the ideas that is that, well, let's talk about Kate Middleton supposedly had children. Now, I don't believe for one second that that woman's been pregnant and had children.
Now, that's interesting. That's certainly interesting in the fact that I can pretty much tell that they can plan ahead and know that it's, you know, going to have a son called George. So, you know, 6 years ahead or something. So they can certainly determine that. So how do they go about doing that? It's interesting. Yeah, interesting.
So, I mean, it's, you know, as soon as it's in the newspapers, there's some aspect of it that it's not real, is leading down some particular path they want us to go. It's certainly not about going out like I did this morning, throwing the ball to my dog and having a look across the bay where I live and seeing that that earth is not curving at all.
Well, you can't see the curvature on any sort of earth and the bigger the size of it, can you? Because we're so small and massive.
Well, actually, that's not quite true, because if you do the calculations over the space of actually quite marked curve, if you do the arithmetic...
Allegedly.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you, yeah, if I mean, you do the arithmetic... There's supposed to be. I mean,
it's supposed to be 8 inches per square mile.
500 feet.
Eight inches per square mile.
The furthest you can see is 3 miles from a standing height. But then you stand there at the seawater's edge and see easily, you know, 20 kilometres just with your naked eye. And with a pair of binoculars, you can see 30 or 40 kilometres or, you know, all of that stuff means that we're just being led up the garden path about this. Our true nature, which is where you were hinting at before, wasn't it, Tom? You were talking about an eternal divine aspect. We need to wipe the clay off and get to our divinity.
Well, yes, in a sense. I'm open to that. Makes you wonder, you know, if you can be fooled on that sort of level, what really is going on, and what, because we're not going to be told things that are going to really empower us, are we? That's the, perhaps things will be held back from us. So. I wonder. I don't know exactly what's going on at all, do I?
But none of the stuff that takes up a huge chunk of our time worth doing.
And no, just talking about looking across water, because it's such a simple point. The official story says things are looming, I think, don't they? They say they kind of, there's this thing of looming where you, if in the right conditions, you could see around the whole Earth if it was six times bigger than it was or something ludicrous. But
looming, that's right. It makes you sound like you're loomy, doesn't it?
Well, it's just weird. It's just looming. I did love the analogy of the Rowbottom's idea that we can't see infinity due to human limitations, and therefore the vanishing point, the true vanishing point. So it calibrates lower, sort of thing, and lowers our perspective. And I thought that's perhaps what, you know, you could, the analogy of that's perhaps what life is like. When we're in these mortal bodies, we can't see. There's kind of a wall put up with death, but actually infinity is the true perspective. I always like that sort of analogy. Said it before.
Yeah.
But it's a good analogy,
I mean, isn't it?
I don't know about that. So even that science of looking across water exactly. You know, it seems to be so obvious that you can see it, and something goes out of view to the naked eye, and then you get a telescope and you see it again on the level. You know, it seems to be so obvious.
But the typical response is apart from that,
happen at sea when you look out at water. You know, things can these mirages can, you know, things can appear in the air. You know.
Yeah, but the typical thing is that it's to do with refraction of the atmosphere. But refraction requires that you move, that light moves from one medium to another, like water to glass and so on.
You've got a bit of atmosphere. You've got the cooling of the water. You see, you're always going over water. You're always going to have the water there, so it's going to cool the air at the bottom. It's always a good excuse for people to explain it away as that. That it's there.
That's right.
You know,
but
when
you do the arithmetic and look at the, you know, the numbers that they're talking about for the refractive index of air is 1.0027 or something, and with water vapor it's 1.0026. You're not going to discern refraction in those mediums, and there isn't going to be a sufficiently clear barrier between the two to notice it. So again, it's just one of the things where you do just a little bit of logical thinking, and that all of that kind of stuff vaporizes, and that's really what's required of all of us is to actually take the stuff that people put in front of us and just run some basic numbers over it. You know, for example, the idea that the tide follows the moon is just ridiculous if you use gravitational theory, because force of gravity, if it exists between the sun and a kilo of water on the Earth's surface, is 200 times the size of the gravitational effect of the moon just using the Newtonian numbers that we're told to believe. So if gravity is the thing that causes the tide,
then
the water should poke towards the sun all the time. But it doesn't
exactly.
You know, so all of these things that we're talking about, Tom, just require us to make at least a small effort to do some minimal analysis.
So what do you think? Flat Earth? Concave?
I think I was on the show about a year ago talking to Kay Hamad, and at that stage she was quite hostile to the idea that there might be...
She's maintained that kind of hostility. She's very not open to it, which is fine, I guess, but I feel like we should be looking into it at the very least as people investigating this kind of thing.
I think the most likely at the moment is it's kind of like a roulette wheel, almost like a Mexican hat.
Oh, you're still on the Mexican hat.
So,
yeah.
Okay,
I mean, I don't know. It's just conjecture, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's all these different models and stuff.
Well, yeah,
it's
the different thing.
You
can use
another model. But
the problem is that's
the tricky thing, because this one's so sophisticated and well-developed that you're going to have a job to come up with anything that doesn't sound silly. You know what I mean? And the thing is, there isn't a firm model, perhaps.
There's not. And you've got to account for things like that Tellurian mine experiment that someone was talking about before. And the Tellurian mine, you know, where you've got there's obviously parts of the Earth where there is a curve upwards. You know, that thing that Lord Stephen Christ talks about,
Stephen Christ. I mean, anyone with that name has got to be, sorry, mate. You know,
oh man,
he's come to the party
riot.
And we've said, look, what's your name? Said Lord Stephen Christ. Well,
he believes that he's Jesus Christ.
I actually think it's more likely that he's a sim. You just see him in front of a computer.
Yeah, no, I saw a video. I'm not saying that this was real, but I did see video where he wasn't in front of a computer. He was out, like, apparently doing some, like, disruption of some NASA guy, asking him all kinds of questions about Bible, flat earth nonsense, you know.
All right. Yes, I'm not 100% convinced he's a real person, by the way, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, I wasn't saying that it was real. I was just saying I had seen something where it was him not in front of a computer.
Well, right.
Regardless of the messenger,
yeah.
I still think we have to, well, until I found out that bit of steel thing is an outright lie, you know, that's a fact that has to be taken into account. We have to account for all the facts, don't we?
Which one is that, the steel?
Yeah, so essentially there is an observation made by the original, what were the Koreshians, the Teeds?
Yeah, yeah.
Cyrus Teed's lot, yeah?
Yes, so yeah. They essentially made these frames and put them across.
Koresh, they called him.
Koreshians.
Where have you heard
the
that
Koreshians. Well, that was when Julian...
Yeah, like Branch Davidian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, That was Texas. John, so I know all about that because I grew up in Texas.
There's another good psyop that we haven't talked about, John Lennon.
Anyway,
Lennon,
so he called himself a messiah, and
he was a
Koresh. And he thought,
So they actually
so
measured
then he had this idea about concave Earth. He wanted to prove it. So he had the reclinator, famously, and they had this crankshaft thing that they cranked across the land for weeks, and they had it so they could showboat it in the press and stuff. And they eventually came up with the conclusion that it was concave.
So that's why I say to you, it could be, you know, one of the options is a Mexican hat model, which has been around for a long time, by the way.
Is that the style that I just sent you? Do you see the link in the?
I'll have a look now.
Yeah, he sent you a link to, a catalog to
it's
for
buying
Stetsons.
It's forbidden for me to have access to that. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
That's for 403 forbidden. I live in Australia, by the way.
I live in Oz.
You just can't get access to information like that.
It's if you hollowed out the idea that I'm imagining. It says if you hollowed out or cut the earth in half, right? So it's like an upside down semicircle, like a bowl. Hollowed it out, and then in the middle of that hollow area is like a raised up area, right? Kind of like a giant volcano, essentially, in the center, like that kind of look.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I know exactly which model you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's exactly the picture that I sent you. So yeah, I thought that's what you meant.
Yeah,
I've seen that one a lot as well.
We just have to account for a lot of things, and we are just not given enough information to make real things. All I can do is disprove models.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can never prove a model anyway. We can only disprove them.
Yeah, absolutely. We can do because I mean we could sit here and argue all day about laser experiments because there's like the 20-mile laser experiment that supposedly you know, shows the concave Earth, but then there's the other laser experiences that I don't know why I keep saying experiences, experiments that show the Earth is flat. You know, there's a whole lot of that. We can't really disprove anything. We can just go off the experiments that we conduct ourselves,
yeah,
and what we see. All I know is that fakery. I mean, who knows what's real, honestly.
All I know is that I've sat at a holiday house which was about 15 feet above sea level, and through a telescope looked across 25 miles of water to see the beach down on the other side of the bay. That's all I know. That's impossible. That required me to be 400 feet in the air to do that.
Yeah, my thought is just my parents, like, they live right down the street from the beach. I go to the beach and I just look straight ahead, and I just see flat, wavy ocean. Yeah. That's it. For goodness knows how far. I mean, tens and tens of miles, right? 20, 30, 40 miles? What? I don't know what line of sight is.
We don't know. You know, it's just a vanishing
point.
How far
can you see with the naked eye? Did you not say 3 miles earlier? I'm not sure how far you can see out. It's weird, isn't it?
That is
it's an interesting question. The way, I mean, your eye line sees it. So the horizon, so you've got your feet on the ground, but you've also got to be able to see the horizon.
But the horizon needs to be at the same time, so something happens in your
vision at that point, moment.
But here's what I think you're about to say. Let's say you go in a plane, just go up and up and up. So the horizon, no matter what height you are, if you have a straight and level theodolite and hold the line of sight exactly parallel, the line of sight of the horizon is always at eye level.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, it's everything that I've ever observed through my entire life, like looking back even now, you know, back when I was, you know, looking back, like I've been in planes a lot, and it's always that. Like I've never seen anything that would show me any sort of outward curve.
Yeah, and I'm 3/4 of the way through pilot training, and in that, the first thing that threw me was the fact that the horizon line didn't drop away as we got high. And the guy that this guy that teaches me said, oh, all you engineers are the same. You keep expecting the horizon line to fall away because you go up. The horizon line is always at eye level. That's how you guide your plane. That's how you fly your plane.
Yeah.
And he says, you engineers are all the same. Every one of us gets into the same boat.
Yeah, I can imagine. It doesn't make any sense with what you've been taught. As soon as you look into it more, you're like, this doesn't mix in.
That's not supposed to be the case, though, Tom, because at 11,000 metres, when you're in a plane at 40,000 feet, the calculation is that the horizon should have dropped down 4 degrees from the horizontal. 4 degrees is very easy to pick.
Yeah. I'm trying to be devil's advocate here. Because,
yeah, no problem.
You know, I think you probably know where I'm at, really, but it just seems so obvious, doesn't it? It rises to the eye line. I just know that debunkers will probably say, you idiot people saying that it rises to the eye line. Of course it does, because if you're looking at it, it's at your level of your eyes.
The whole idea is that it's not supposed to. It's the higher you get, it's a thing called the declination, Tom. The higher you get at that horizon level could fall from, you know, if you can imagine looking straight out, straight and level, right?
I've looked at the balloons up there.
Yeah, so as you rise higher, the line which marks the horizon of the Earth, if it's a sphere, should gradually lower down from 90 degrees, 89 to 87, 88. When you're flying in a plane at 11,000 metres or 40,000 feet or whatever it is, declination is nearly 4 degrees. It's marked. Right? And with a simple surveying instrument, you can easily observe 4 degrees. They measure half a degree. They measure 0.0000 of a degree. Not observed. It's unobservable. No engineer in the world, no mining engineer, no civil engineer, no one ever makes an allowance in their surveying work for the curvature of the Earth, even for projects like the Suez Canal, even for projects like the aqueduct in New York, which goes underground for 100 miles or more. They're all, no account taken at all of curvature. No real world application of curvature anywhere.
Yeah, nothing.
That's it.
So even if it does exist, it doesn't exist in our
very
world.
Very small. Everyone would always say, don't they? They'd always say, over very small distances, of course, which is like a building is, you wouldn't do. It's impractical. So you're kind of, you know, there's a tiny fraction out, but you don't count it, sort of thing.
That's not the case for an aqueduct, like those aqueducts the Romans built in Turkey.
Well, as we know, you've got to go. Well, you know, it goes a few feet in 3 miles or something, doesn't it? A foot down or something.
Yeah, they have very low gradients.
It's eight
inches per mile.
Yeah, per square mile. Inches per square mile is what the space organizations are supposedly. You know, the astrophysicists and all those, you know, shill people. That's what they say is 8 inches per square mile. Which is ridiculous.
Over 25 miles, it's 400 feet.
It's what?
400 feet over 25 miles.
Yeah, which would certainly be noticeable.
If you want to see...
From sea level in front of the ocean, looking straight out at the ocean, you would be able to observe that.
Well, you'd be able to see a ship go over it, wouldn't you?
They move higher as they go away. They dip and then they move higher.
All you need is a telescope and you bring the thing back in.
That's interesting. You said they dip and then they go higher.
Yeah, from a vantage point, like a straight flat area, they would appear to dip as they go further, but then they'd come back to meet your eye level.
That's if you use a telescope.
Yes, if you use a telescope, not the naked eye.
Yeah. They'll disappear from the bottom up. You see half of it just going over it, and then you put your binoculars to your eyes, and then can you see them again?
Yeah, you can see it perfectly flat at your eye level again.
Because you've
and
been
then when
told,
does that but... end? You know, is that never ending? If you had the most powerful telescope you could possibly have, could you just see it unending?
Well, no, after a while, the atmosphere interferes with the flow of light.
Yeah, you'll get you know, the basic fog type effect. But I believe, if that was not, I would believe that you would be able to see infinitely. Because once they get to the point where they can't do it anymore, then they'd have to circle, because eventually, you know, they'd hit a point where they can't keep going, obviously. And that's in any alternate Earth model, obviously.
Which part of the world are you in, Tom?
Cambridge, England.
Were you anywhere near the ocean at all there?
Well, I'm not that far away, but no, it'd be an hour's drive, I suppose. I don't go very, I mean, that's probably quite close to some people, but I don't often go to the ocean, but I should do, yeah.
Yeah, definitely something to go look at least for yourself, you know, see what you observe. I mean, because our greatest tool that we have is our naked eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been sharing on Facebook that are questioning the you know, calling it, saying it looks flat and asking people to go on their summer holidays and have a look, you know. I've been trying to ask the question, you know.
Yeah.
What I might do is post a link to a blog that I do where I talk about sphericity. Can I do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me just...
I'm going to be dipping off here in a few minutes. Just so
I better go as well.
I gotta head off to class.
I just come get into it. You know, it's addictive. It's good to chat. You know. It's just it's now 1:37 here. Yeah, it's time's flying by.
I only meant to jump in and chat for a little while, and then got moved over to the audio chat. You know, don't want to break up that conversation when we get going.
As they said, breaking up is hard to do.
Disappeared. I don't know what happened with him.
Yeah, he just dipped off.
He's all right.
Yeah, to get some ice cream. I'll put a link there for you just to explain
how to your penis.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
It's the most important thing. If that works, it means we're working in our brain and our body, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a fair point, yeah.
So if you have a look at that link, Tom, you'll see how to calculate the distances.
Oh, we've got Lumberjack Greg's now in the lobby. I don't know if he can come in. I can't see a link in there. I'm looking in the...
live stream. I've just typed a...
Yeah, it's probably automatically in the Fakeologist audio chat, and you have to click the tab over to the live stream chat.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I see it. Okay.
There's a way to calculate.
How to take care of your penis. Yeah, thank you,
that
Frank.
That was my first thought, too.
you see, this is important information, cutting-edge stuff. Thank you.
It's where it's all about, yeah.
Well, it's important for me, that sort of stuff. You know,
I've got a real penis now.
I'm on my own.
Exactly.
It's been real, fellas. And thank you very much in anticipation of a imminent departure on my part. But it's 1:38 in the morning here now, so thanks for hearing me waffle a bit.
Au revoir.
Yeah, always good to chat.
Great chatting with you guys.
I better do the same.
Yeah, I'm gonna look into this for a little bit and take off and head off to school.
Cheers.
Yep, have a good one.
Yeah, cheers. I'm logging out. Cheers now. Good night, gentlemen. Cheers.
Good night.
Hi, this has been Fakeologist Audio Chat with Psiopticon, Conscious Vegan, Ab Arado, Tom Dalpra. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Hi, I'm Paul. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.